This meeting is now being recorded.
Sometimes if you're wondering about how sensitive these mics are, I told during the last public meeting we had that at some point I made the comment, I have a headache. When I got back to my home court the next day, two or three people from admin came up to me and said, how's your headache? And I did have a headache, but don't anymore. But I'll welcome, thank you all very much for making the trek in today. I'm going to have Brandy take role in just a few moments, but you will see that there are a few people that were not able to be here today. You know, I think to keep things in perspective, the budget is important and it's critical to all of us, but other things such as the fires that we're all experiencing right now put sort of things in comparison. We have some judges even on this committee, I think, that will not be here today because they're trying to get themselves and their courts through that crisis. So we do keep them. I would ask that you all keep them in your thoughts and prayers as those crises continue. Additionally, I'm just going to start at the beginning instead of the end, and you all note that things are changing on this committee and the makeup of this committee. Decisions, final decisions have not been made yet, but I'll be transitioning to the council, and I just want to thank everybody so much for this experience over the past few years. When people talk to me about TICBAC, I routinely and honestly tell them that the secret is everybody sitting in this room. It is a committee that is vibrant and involved and wise, and the trial courts are much better because of all of your services to them. And I thank you very much for the past few years that we've all had together. I'm not going to be a stranger. This has really been good. The couple staff, not staff changes, but within the committee, I've asked Judge Buckley to take over as co-chair with Rebecca Fleming on the funding methodology subcommittee, which is where a lot of the work has funneled to. And luckily, Judge Buckley said, sure, he's already come to one of the meetings and is starting off with sleeves rolled up and knowledge a lot, I think, from Sherry next to him. So, Judge Buckley, thank you very much for agreeing to help out with us on that very important subcommittee to this committee. And with that, I'm going to ask Brandy to take roll.
Judge Conklin.
Yes.
Judge Barton.
He's
Judge Blum.
He's dealing with a fire.
Brandy, just want to make sure it's on the record that Mike Waddy has Judge Barton's proxy.
Thank you.
Waddy.
Got it. Thank you. Judge Buckley.
Here.
Judge Coe.
Here.
Judge Herman.
Here.
Judge Heinrich.
Here.
Judge Lucas. Judge Marginis.
Judge Marginis and David Yamasaki texted me at 4:45 this morning as their flight was changed, and they'll be here in about half an hour.
Judge Marigonda.
Present.
Judge McCabe.
And he got in touch with me late last night. He had a calendaring conflict that came up at the last minute. He won't be with us. But Brian, are you calling in? He will.
Okay. Ms. Carter?
Here.
Ms. Eberhardt?
Here.
Mr. Finke?
Here.
Ms. Fleming?
Here.
Ms. Flenner?
Here.
Mr. Harrigan?
Here.
Mr. Planet?
Here.
Mr. Roddy?
Here.
Ms. Romero-Soles?
Here.
Mr. Taylor? Ms. Ugrin? And I know Mr. Wardlaw is out for advisory members, skipping on the softy since he's in transit. Mr. Theodorovich?
Here.
And Judge Gabe.
And I asked Judge Gabe to stay back in Fresno. If you care, we're both former AUSAs, assistant U.S. attorneys, and the federal court needed a judge today because they're all on some trip. And so Judge Gabe is filling in federal court, so she can't be here today.
Okay.
All right. Again, thank you all very much. One thing I wanted to take care of administratively as far as the procedures of this committee as chair, for instance, you heard a proxy is going to get exercised today. There's a little bit of inconsistencies between this committee, advisory committee, and the council itself and how proxies are exercised. And I think it's best that we just be consistent with the council and the council's practices. And the council's practices are that proxies are not exercised or used. We encourage members to call in, as for instance, Mr. Planet's doing today. So I think to remain consistent with that as chair, I've asked, today we're going to honor the proxies because this is a new practice. But from here on out, unless it changes from other people, my request is going to be that we simply not use proxies, that individuals participate by phone or in person to the extent possible. I think that just, again, keeps practices consistent among advisory committees and among the council itself.
Question. I'm sorry if I didn't hear it, but for today, then only did you have Judge
Lucas's?
Yes, I have Judge
Marshall. Yeah.
Right.
So when he arrived. Right. Yep. Thank you very much for clearing that up, Rebecca. I appreciate that. So next, I'm going to move and ask if there is a motion to approve the minutes from our May 31st tick-back telephonic meeting that are included on page 4 of your materials.
I move approval.
All right. Thank you. Any seconds?
Second.
Moved and seconded that the minutes of the May 31st TICFAC teleconference meeting be approved. Is there any opposition to that moved and seconded motion? Hearing no opposition in the room or on the phone, the minutes from the May 31st meeting are approved. Concerning written and in-person public comment, I was told there is no written public comment or in-person. You may note, and it'll be further down in our session today, we are going to have Judge Austin join us addressing the interpreter issue. And when he joins us, then I will share as well some comments that I've received from Justice Cuellar. They're not public comment, but I think out of respect for his comments, but I'm obviously going to share those with the group. And so getting right into the agenda, that now takes us to item one on the agenda, which is the funding methodology work plan. And Lucy's here to start us off on that. And by the way, when I said earlier thanks to the committee, I always say it at the end of the meeting. I don't know why I went to the end, so I'm going to say it at the beginning again. And you all know this because you've seen what happens in the room, but the budget services staff that helps assist this committee is invaluable to the work this committee does. And we say that every time, and people are like, yeah. But I really think you should appreciate that. And I know everybody in the room does, but I think sometimes folks, their perspectives of budget services staff are not flavored by actually being and working with them and not understanding their true motive and intent is to do the best for the trial courts that they can. And I'm not saying everybody's perfect, and I'm not saying that it's not without controversy at times, but I am saying the work they do from my perspective as chair, and I think others, is as good as we could hope for and actually better than I could have hoped for coming into this. And I thank them all for the work that they do for us and will continue to do for us. That being said, turning to one of those, Lucy.
Judge McCabe needs the code, please.
Thank you. I will email that to him now.
See the work they do?
Multi-tom.
That's right. So this is item one, the work plan of the funding methodology subcommittee, which is now chaired by Dr. Buckley and Rebecca Fleming.
So since TMAC last saw this work plan, it has been updated 3 times by the FMS in March, May, and July. I'm not going to list out the changes, as you can all read. But I guess not normally staff to sort of have comment, but I would just like to say I think it's amazing to see what we've lined off this work plan. Amazing the work that FMS has done over the last year and a half. So, Judge Buckley, I'm not saying that I have any time ahead.
Now you're telling me.
they just got rid of the easy stuff. So you've got the tough ride ahead. But so I just think just the changes they've made here, they're just a testament to the work they've done. So unless anyone particularly wants me to go through the list, I will open it up to pass it back to Judge.
Okay, any discussions on the work plan? Any concerns about that? It's pretty self-explanatory. I don't know if Rebecca wants to add anything. You know, the FMS meetings are public meetings as well. It's obviously a smaller group of this committee, and those folks, like I commented about TICPAC in general, come into the room with work prepared and ready to accomplish, and they've accomplished significant things. We've worked a lot through, for instance, funding methodology, those important things. There are many, at least as challenging items to come for Judge Buckley and Rebecca and the members of that committee. So I didn't know, Rebecca, what you wanted to add to that.
So I would just add, you know, Lucy mentioned that we've
that is really to try and be as responsive as possible to the request to get things on the agenda and keep moving forward as quickly as possible. As space moves, you know, opens up, we're trying to slip other things in there. And so even though it keeps coming back and hasn't changed, it's usually because we've made some kind of progress. And so the committee's been really great, and they have done a lot of heavy lifting. So
I have a question.
Sure.
On G, where it talks about review court-appointed dependency allocation and determine allocation methodology for 1920, was that for all courts or just small courts? I remember there being a need for all courts, because I think the allocation methodology has been done and approved, and the question was, what do we do with the small courts? Because I remember volunteering to be part of that. So I think that's right. I think it's just small courts.
I think that's right.
Right, but it would impact all, possibly, depending on what the changes could be to the small court.
But I would not be willing to reopen the entire method.
I agree with that.
So I think it needs to say as it relates to small courts or one court. Or, I don't really know the right terminology, but
we'll make sure
we don't want to go through whole review again, because that was a very difficult process.
Right.
Okay.
I think previously it was small courts because there were cluster ones and twos. And
it could be small courts. Okay. Are you a cluster two now, Kevin?
Currently, yes.
Okay. No. Whatever Kevin was. But anyway, I just want to make sure that we did not review the entire methodology.
It does impact the number of cluster twos.
Yeah.
I think just in remoteness, and there's just other issues to address.
Them, and we just need to make sure that we word it so that we're not looking at the whole piece.
Absolutely.
Any other comments? Again, I'm just stating the obvious, but for folks listening in, that a lot of things, too, depend on schedules and reports and how this work gets accomplished. So a lot of these decisions start with FMS and the work they put in. Then it comes to take back and the recommendation goes to the council, as we're going to see today with some things we're working on. But a lot of those decisions are governed by the time it takes to refer things back to FMS, back to take back, and then on to the council, which is why they move like they do.
I just have a question.
Yes.
On the civil assessment, we're still looking at, like, courts that have MOEs and MOU obligations, right? Are still going to be considered?
That's
okay.
Right.
Perfect. Okay.
That's with legal services council.
Any other comments, concerns? That's an action item, isn't it?
Yes.
It's an action item to, and the recommendation is that you approve the work plan as proposed at pages 8. 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 of your materials.
With Sherry's edit.
G, which staff will clean up to emphasize that it's small court.
And I would make that motion.
Tanya makes the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Rebecca Fleming. Any other comments, concerns, or discussions on the motion to approve the Funding Methodology Subcommittee work plan for the fiscal year? Any opposition to the motion, including those members? Mike Planus on the phone. Judge McCabe, were you able to join us yet?
I have. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. So Judge McCabe is now with us. Any opposition to the seconded motion to approve the work plan? Pausing to allow folks on the phone. Hearing none, the work plan is approved. Thank you very much for that. We're now going to go next in order to item number two, the allocation of the $75 million that we're all familiar with. And when I say the $75 million, I remind everybody, just so we're all on the same sheet of music, and to update you, so the council has now approved essentially funding through TCGF and the IMF for the trial courts. And the $75 million that we talk about is the $75 million that came to us through the legislature and the governor. It was actually 65-10 is the way they described it. But that $75 million coming to us and how that was to be allocated. And so we're moving to that point and that discussion item now. We Lucy, did you want to?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about how we are today and where we are based upon the FMS recommendation, because I want to be real careful and encourage any discussion about folks that have any concerns about this, because I know a lot of people have appropriately wanted to make sure that this is candid, transparent, and effective as possible. So FMS had a, and I'll invite Judge Buckley and Rebecca if they want to add anything to this, had a spirited discussion about the $75 million. It was one of the beauties of that group is nobody's shy, and it was not a shy meeting. And we had discussions about how that $75 should be allocated, and the bulk of the discussion, from my recollection and perception, was a discussion between a staff recommendation, which was a methodology that did not reflect, well, it was not a pure WAFM, or a funding methodology subcommittee that had been, funding methodology had been approved by the council. Allocation methodology was what was referred to then as a pro rata methodology. And FMS made clear in their vote that they did not accept, nor were they going to pass on the pro rata recommendation, that in fact they felt that it was important, vitally important, that the workload allocation funding methodology continue to be utilized, considering it was approved by the council. And that was the motion that came out of FMS to come to this meeting today. So the recommendation from FMS was just to recommend a kickback, that the $75 million be allocated via a modified WAFM, in the sense of, I'll remind you all that the first step of WAFM was, or the second step actually, was to take care of the courts that are below the line, so to speak. But the $47.8 million already took care of that. So with the $47.8 that came out of the budget was actually specific, and the legislature used the language referring to WAFM and said that goes out via WAFM. But they did not say that versus the $75 million. The language was markedly absent. And at the FMS meeting, I was coming forward with the perception and the thought that that meant it should not go out via WAFM. And obviously, FMS took a different route on that. But it was a discussion we all recognized was important, and a discussion that we all, I think, recognized. And again, Kim had important comments there. I want anybody who wants to supplement, just to make sure that everybody thinks this is as accurate as possible, had some very, very important comments that were to be heard. And we did all recognize that it wasn't an issue that was all that clear, that there was some perception that there could have been perhaps a slightly clearer message about how it was supposed to go out. So I went to council on July 20th, whatever that Friday was, to appear as kickback chair, mainly for the purpose of presenting to them every year, as I do with Zlatko, the allocations for the billions of dollars to the trial court through TCTF and the IMF. And as typical, council members had already read through it. They'd read it. The chief called for a vote, called for comment. There wasn't a comment. It was seconded. The motion to approve seconded very, very quickly after Zlatko gave a very efficient presentation on that money.
I don't think I said anything.
Well, that was always a very efficient presentation. It was here's the numbers. And then I asked the chief for leave to ask for guidance from the council, because I wanted to make sure that if there was any message that we needed to understand, that it came from the council, and it did. And so at that point, it was in fact made clear. There were, I think, four council members that made comment. And it was made clear that, yes, that's exactly what the legislative language was, and that's the way the allocation was to occur. And when I say that, I mean 47.8 via WAFM, 75 not. And at the direction that day, and that was my specific request, I asked the council for direction as chair of TICBAC to take back the TICBAC as we consider the FMS recommendation concerning the $75 million methodology. And at least my recollection is, I think, four or five council members spoke up and said, that's what it is. And I think it started, I forget who it started with, Jake made comments, Judge Anderson made comments, Judge So made comments. I'm trying to just think around the council.
Bolieri.
Pardon me? Justice Hall, Bolieri. And those comments were and Judge Rubin were very clear. It has to go out. The $75 million has to be a methodology other than WAFM. And so I shared those comments to open up the discussion. So now what you have before you today in your materials, and that's so we
we're all looking at the same thing, and that starts at page 15. So you now have an option today, and you'll note the recommendation from staff at the end is it's up to you. Select one of the three options. So the three options are the WAFA methodology that FMS said no to, and then the FMS pro rata methodology, and then an additional methodology that, thanks to Kim Flenner and Jake Chatters, and you know, sometimes just people looking at it and just sort of stepping back and saying, maybe there's a different way to approach this, a proportional share methodology. And the proportional share methodology looks at the numbers that were approved by the council most recently at the July 20th meeting and distributes a $75 million based upon everybody's proportional share of that allocation. And then you have those numbers before you. So the chart at page 18 lays out the three options. There's the modified WAFM. There's the proportional share that was not before FMS. That's coming forward now. And then the pro rata. Kim, or did I see your hand up?
Yes.
Go ahead.
So I just want, since I was one of the most vocal in the FMS meeting about we must carry WAFM forward, that is our methodology that this branch adopted. Hearing the comments directly that were made and the direction given by the council, I recognized that we had to come up with an alternative. So where I want to say, and I know proportionate share, pro rata share, same thing basically, but the difference in these two options between two and three for me is that we're not taking those courts below the line farther apart like option three would. This brings in that 47.8, allocates it first, brings those courts up, and then we're using the proportionate share of the funding, which is why I think it's an acceptable option. As you said, you know, $1.6 billion is still being allocated via WAFM, just a small portion because that's the direction we were given. So I support it, and that's why we suggested it. Option two.
Hi, Brian. I think another important thing to have in front of this committee is the council's perspective that this is a one-year process, not an ongoing process, that they remain committed to WAFM going forward. But given the situation we find ourselves in, that this was the best way in which to allocate the $75 million on this one-time basis. And I don't want people to feel like we're abandoning WAFM because that was not the council's intent. But I also wanted that at least part of this record.
And I'm glad you added that. That was discussed actually at the council,
right.
And it was made clear, and I as well tried to emphasize that, and I shared the what I think is the continued concern and understanding of this committee, and that is a lot of work was put into the funding methodology. It's an appropriate funding methodology. This, if there is an alternative to the $75 million that's approved today to go to the council, that should not be indicative or interpreted to be this committee's perception that, in fact, we're pulling back from WAFM. It's actually just the opposite. We're recognizing, and I think, as I said earlier, you know, Kim just said it. Don't forget that I think 97% of the budget is going out via the workload allocation methodology that was approved, and the legislature even said in their budget language, the 47.8, and they used the term. So I think that gives a lot of credibility to that methodology. So, Mike, I'm glad you added that. Yes, Judge Maragondas.
Yes, after reviewing and listening to the comments that were made by the Judicial Council members, I support option two because it takes into account the most recent numbers. My difficulty with option three is it's based on a 2017-2018 allocation. The proportionate share takes into account the recent numbers we have, which is critical for our courts and budgeting.
So, Judge Maragondas, was that a motion? I am
making a motion. After considering the three options, I think option two serves the trial courts much better.
I would second the motion.
All right. Judge Herman has seconded the motion, so I'm now inviting discussion. Mike Roddy?
Not to muddy the waters, but There was also discussion about the $10 million and the legislative intent that that money go towards reporters and family law cases as to whether that needed to be handled separately or not. And I'm not advocating that it should be, but I do think we need to pay attention to the expenditure of whatever funds we give to the courts so that if and when we're asked to report back on did we in fact comply with legislative intent, we can answer yes or no. And so, not to break it into two parts, but I do think we've got to keep that on the table because I can see that one coming back where there, somebody's going to want to know, did we in fact spend the $10 million as they wanted us to?
And I think that's very important. I mean, as I understand the discussion, the prior FMS was focused on the allocation, but the intent language now needs to be part of the conversation. But I think we probably should think about the allocation first, and we can have a discussion about the legislative intent afterwards.
Right. So the dollars going out are the same. It's just you're right. The legislative intent about maybe the way that they ultimately be spent is what we're talking about here. Tanya?
I'm clearly going to support that motion. And I think there are ways that we can internally look at the expenditures of the $10 million and be able to explain whatever enhancements we've been able to make from that. So,
Judge Heinrichs?
So I just think we need to make it clear to all courts that are above the line that if there's another WAFM allocation, they may receive a cut, you know, as far as different way the methodology works to some extent because, you know what, when you're looking at those that may be above the line, that I think that's one of the reasons why the 75 is wants to be shared differently so that everybody would get some proportion of that. But that as we try to move people closer together, if you're above the line, you still may get, you know, you still may either not get the same amount of gain in some year or other things that happen. So that, you know, I just think that some of the discussion about by staying at WAFM, we move people closer together. Clearly, that's not what we're going to do, and that's fine. But I think that as we follow through, that's the idea that those that have been historically below the line will see gains to get even. And those that have been above the line have been above the line for a very long time. And we talked about historically overfunded and those historically underfunded. And so I think that everybody, well, I'm willing to sort of recognize the need in this particular case, but those that are still above the line need to be mindful that we're trying to bring people together, and that especially for courts that besides the cluster courts that are, you know, at 100%, over 100%, close to 100%, you know, that in a year where there's potential for them to have to you know, give a bit more, and they need to recognize that as the ones that have been below the line are moving up, but still they've been below the line for a very long time. And so I think it's important that we remain united. I mean, we were able to unite in a way to get this through, and that it's important that we all kind of stay on the same page, recognizing that that's the direction WAFM takes us all to get to a spot where we're more equal. And I think the either one, I'm supporting option two, but either one keeps people at different spots, which is why the funding methodology committee was not supported without this additional direction. So that just needs to be part of the conversation, I think.
Kim?
So part of what Jake and I proposed, or when we were coming up with the recommendation, what we talked about as we thought that we would need more sort of intense language, not just with regard to the family law court reporter component, but what was the legislature and governor's office going to get for their $75 million. And we talked about giving each and every court a proportionate share of that funding to accomplish X. And one of the suggestions was perhaps using the budget snapshots that they're all familiar with, taking maybe the top three things off of those budget snapshots and saying, this is what, you know, this funding will go toward accomplishing putting more court reporters in family law and XYZ processing for thousand hours, whatever that might be. But we thought we needed to have intent language with the recommendation that would cover those things. And I think it kind of speaks to that is there's an expectation of those courts certainly that are perhaps at 100% or really close to it, that this is what they're supposed to do with that funding, not tying it directly, not coming back and reporting, we spent $2 million on this and 1.4, but as your overall allocation, here's the expectation.
And expectation is a good way to put it. You're right. There's certain expectations that we're...
But we're not dictating.
Right.
But it's a strong expectation, that's for sure. Yep. Other comments?
So, are you saying that the actual recommendation to the council have language beyond simply we recommend option two?
Chair, that was the direction we thought we had to go. If this committee feels like it will pass just fine with
being proportionate with that language, with intent language,
no. So nothing regarding court reporters.
Well, in the report, but not in the recommendation. Is that what you're saying, Shay?
I really would have hoped, and I'm sorry to interrupt you. Can you finish?
No, I had a question answered.
Okay, I would strongly oppose anything that would look at a court's snapshot or, you know, anything. I think that the money should be discretionary for the courts to use how they feel like they need to. And I think that if we need to track the amount of money that is going to court reporters, that's something the branch should do. But I clearly don't think our allocation should be tied to how we're going to be spent.
Yeah, the recommendation in the materials is the recommendation in the materials. So it's option two, proportional share. And then if we're looking at that pure option, then it does not include the language that Kim talked about. And I understand Sherry's concern as well that we just go right with option two. You know, on the other hand, we all recognize that there are priorities that are at least being observed from the outside, and it's all important that, for instance, access to justice, I'm just stating the obvious. Trial courts are expected to use their money as best they can and the allocations as best they can to increase access to justice. That's what you do. And there may be more of a focus in years to come of, we're giving you this money, how are you increasing access to justice? So I'm overgeneralizing, but I think we all share the same understanding that there's that at least expectation from the outside that you spend the money wisely.
Sure.
Other discussion. So was it seconded?
Yes.
All right, it was. Any other, and again, it's only 10:40, so not trying to encourage comments if folks don't think they need to be heard, but I want to make sure as we get, because what's going to happen, so here's what, never mind. Let's take this, and then I'll let you know what I'm going to try to do as this recommendation moves forward. So it's been moved and seconded. Judge Buckley?
I concur that if we have direct or indirect language as to how money could be spent, it could be either misinterpreted and or tie the hands of individual courts that we don't want to do. And it may be too cute. It might be too cute to use the word too cute. But whether we outright say we fully want, intend that all future trial court funding is via WAFA, but for 18-19, we recommend to the council the language of option two. And then the words may not go anywhere. I think it sends a clear message that if you're above 100%, future may have a different result, but so I just throw that out for discussion. It would be good to have a strong record that WAFM is the way going forward.
Judge Cope?
I did equivalent. I don't know that it's above 100% versus above the line where other courts are at. So I guess I'm asking. I don't really need an answer, though. I think it's above the average, above where other courts are. If you're above that average, then you need to be thinking about that possibility in the future.
I agree with you. But I agree with your point, but I think
and I agree with
what you. We're doing is in large part, is in part, to
remind
that those above us.
I agree with Judge Buckley's comment, and I think whether it be reflected in the budget report the council or whether or not and I expressed the desire of this committee, of this advisory committee, but that the reason today we are sort of altering slightly the original FMS recommendation is what has now been the guidance from the council, but recognizing what was the legislative intent for the $75 million standing alone. So that's all this is the $75 million standing alone, but the future allocations are allocated pursuant to the funding methodology that was approved by the council. Absent, I mean, obviously we can't control if the money comes to us with a string on it and says it like whatever it has to be, but otherwise.
And it can be in the report. It doesn't have to be necessarily in the recommendation.
So I actually like the idea of it being in the report itself, and maybe it could be somehow in reference to the direction of the council itself and their recognition of WAFM. I would not want any kind of ties around the money, you know, so I think the more we could separate the two as far as, you know, the ties around the money, that would be important. The other thing is, if we have this language too involved in the recommendation itself, I think it puts in the possibility of the council being uncomfortable with the recommendation. I think at this point, at least my interpretation of the direction is doing something, you know, other than WAFM, and, you know, the other thing is we need to get it out to the courts. And so recognizing their direction and their acknowledgement of WAFM, I think, is really important. So if that could be in the body of the report somewhere, separate from the recommendation, I think that would be helpful, and it would maybe serve the point of emphasizing that WAFM is continuing to be our direction. And I would just offer that up.
And so I agree, the recommendations we've made to the council in the past that have received, the council has essentially moved most swiftly on those recommendations. It's the economy of words, where our recommendations are very clear, as I believe they're set out here in option two, as far as the actual recommendation and therefore what council will be asked to consider to approve.
I agree with all of that, but think that we can, in using economy of words, put it into our recommendation by at subsection 3, indicating allocate the remainder of the $75 million in discretionary funds to all courts. And then at the end of the last
sentence. Can you tell me just what page you're on so we're all looking at the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Just because it's easier to look at there. So insert where it says allocate the remainder of the $75 million. Add in discretionary funds to all courts. This way it's clear that we assume that it is discretionary funds and we're not talking about reinvestment or having to report back. It is discretionary. And I think that keeps with the language of the legislative intent. And then at the end of the very last sentence where it says, following the Judicial Council actions taken on July 20th, 2018, there I have not artfully come up with anything yet, but that there continues to be a commitment to a WAFM-based allocation in future years, something along those lines.
So okay. Even though I raised the issue, I think the comments of making this as clean and succinct as possible, because the next point I think should be raised is that in the report, we underscore to the council that the sooner that this council decision can be made, the better it is for the trial courts, to the point that if the council could have an August phone meeting, again, in the report, what I believe is the council's approach, if we threw in that little language, it may cause some to want to discuss it and wait for September rather than, with fingers crossed, they would see a very direct recommendation, thumbs up, thumbs down type of issue, and hopefully have a phone meeting in August, and we actually request or suggest that in the report.
Do you feel that would be for both suggestions or just the
I think
latter?
The latter.
I think the discretionary one is kind of without any argument. The latter one might be pushing it a little bit.
If I may, I would think that we would separate that. I don't think that there's especially given the sensitivity of the actions of the legislature and the administration, I mean, that's something that's separate apart as part of the overall forward movement of the council and, you know, on allocations that include things that are on the work plan. Clearly those all issues are still part. We just acted on what the future plans are, and we'll be looking at future years regarding over 100%. So I think for the discretionary funds is, a good clarification. Adding additional about the future in a current year allocation,
think it, in my opinion, goes beyond, and I think we could address it as far as the report.
So let's then just take it one step at a time. So if we're going to insert the discretionary, then Judge Maragondo, would you agree as part of your motion that simply the word discretionary or the words discretionary funds be allocated, we say allocate the remainder of the $75 million of discretionary funds to all courts?
Yes.
And the second was from?
Judge Herman.
Judge Herman, would you join in that?
Yes.
Okay. And I agree. So what Judge, I think, who just mentioned it, Judge Buckley just mentioned the potential of getting a decision from the council prior to the September meeting. I want to be real careful here because the council has a lot of different considerations and it has to go through E&P and then gets to the council. So I don't mean to say that this will happen or that I'm being presumptuous, but if a very clear recommendation and the consensus comes from this group, then I feel much more comfortable asking that the council consider a meeting on Thursday, August 16th, which is when I think many of you are going to meet. Isn't there a joint meeting that day?
Yes, yeah.
And that I would, so just so you know, my request of the council is going to be that they agree to hold a telephonic meeting on that Thursday, concurrent with the meeting held by all of you, for the one recommendation from TCMAC concerning the allocation of the $75 million, because the other very clear message I think we're all receiving and I've been receiving is thank you for the money, but we've got to, as soon as possible, we've got to know what it is because we have a lot of very important decisions to make. And while we're not trying to be ungrateful, and we can make the decision later if we have to, the earlier the better. So with that language, I feel comfortable that I could maintain credibility in asking the council to have that August meeting. Now, that being said, there may be a lot of practical reasons they can't do that, but I think the ask is one that at least comes is legitimate. Kim?
Sorry, just a clarification. Judge Buckley, were you suggesting that language be in the report with regard to getting this allocation out sooner rather than later?
Yes. If Blacko and others feel it's not in our place,
You're asking the chair to request of the council through E&P that this be expedited and if there's a way. So, I mean, the report would, I think, be written as is, but I think the compromise is that you're asking the chair as this body to request that of E&P to have an expedited meeting.
Just because a few of the courts did reach out also with that suggestion, thinking that it was important enough to indicate the need to allocate those allocations and notifications sooner so that they can move forward.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be the first one to make the ask. But I think, it's not me. I'm going to say as chair of TCMAC that the committee ask if it is logistically possible, recognizing the other commitments of the Judicial Council, that they hold a special meeting that day for that single purpose. All we can do is ask.
Then the thought would be then, no, it would not be in the report. We would get a consensus of this group to ask the chair to make that attempt.
And that's what I interpret your consensus to be.
Would it be better for staff or for you if it was actually another recommendation that was alongside the allocation? Does that make it easier for?
So separate. So it's not necessarily something that it's an action item.
It's not in the report. I think the report, if we approve proportional share, the report is here's what TCMAC considered, here's what TCMAC is recommending the council adopt. And then the committee asks of the chair, and I will do that the chair make a formal request through E&P that the council have a meeting on August 16th for the sole purpose of considering the $75 million allocation methodology recommended by TCMAC.
The council won't see the report until they meet.
Got it.
So it's been moved and seconded, but again, any discussions, any concerns about the option two being the recommendation from TCMAC for the council's consideration with adding the word discretionary funds to Roman numeral three or III. Hearing no additional comments or requests for discussion. Is there, and I'm going to handle it the same way I do with every one of them, is there anybody that's opposed to the motion that's been seconded that option two be forwarded to the Judicial Council, including Judge, those on the phone? Any opposition to the motion? A
I've waited, I've paused, I've listened, I've looked, I see no opposition, therefore we'll deem it unanimously approved that option two be the recommendation of the council for the $75 million of the methodology allocation, of the allocation.
Judge, and did you make it, I missed the first part of the meeting when you were talking about the proxies, but so Brian Taylor's proxy, I do have.
Okay,
thank
so
you.
The proxies that are exercised, and I have Judge Lucas. Who was it?
Mark Zimmerman.
But they're not.
You have enough.
They're with him.
Yeah.
Right. So what I'm going to do, just to make sure, because Judge Marginis and David Yamasaki are probably running into the building.
They are. Mm-hmm.
So to be fair to them, because I did get a text at 4:45 saying we'd like to be present for discussions. And I told them there's another discussion that they particularly want to make comment on. But if they come in and say, hold on a minute, you said we could be heard, I'm going to open this item back up again. And we'll go back to them for the opportunity to make a comment so we make sure that everybody has a chance to be heard. All right?
So can I ask you a question? You didn't have anyone object to the motion, did you?
No.
So can't you consider it passed unless they have something they want to be reconsidered?
That's what I'm going to do.
We have, okay.
That's what I'm going to do. Yep. Now, for clarification, and we talked about it, Slotko touched on it earlier, and I think Judge Buckley did too. Remember that the language actually said 65 and 10. The dollar allocation is the $75 million. That's the way it's going to be allocated. But the legislative intent was, as it from the trial courts, the proportional share, and however the math breaks down, whatever part 10 is of 75.
Like 13 and a third.
Right.
Perpetuating it.
Those, so that was what the hope was or the expectation was concerning money on family law court reporters. Now, since that time, the court came up with a little decision that impacts all of us about Jameson and about court reporters and how that might impact us. So I think it's going to involve a lot more than $10 million. But I think one thought I had was, and I think what I'm going to ask staff to do is just distribute out how that money would look, so the courts just see the way those dollars would break. It's not a mandate, but that was the legislative, that was the 65-10. So if it was whatever your share of the 75 that comes in, here's the way it would look if you break it down 65-10.
I think it was just for that FMS meeting.
It was proportionate.
That wasn't part of the proportionate part of the program. So it'll be just modified for the proportional, and we'll get it distributed everybody so they have it. Mike Roddy?
A concern with that is that there are courts that are fully staffed in family, and therefore they would need to spend 13% of their allocation on family law court reporters, because the language also says that it should not supplant existing expenditures. It may be a better tack to survey the courts and have them indicate what they are planning to do in response to Jameson and the legislative intent. I think we may get the $10 million on the natural, but to hold all the courts accountable for 13% of the allocation for family law court reporters doesn't account for the fact that many courts wouldn't need to spend any money because they're already providing 100%.
I understand that, Dr. Speaking, if I may, but I think in terms of just the math that was identified in the budget bill language, I think there is value in identifying how $10 million of an allocation would be reflected. The additional story would come from the survey that would inform a response that, as I'm sitting and Martin and any of my partners here at a hearing in the spring, would ask what happened to that legislative intent, that we could have, I think, an accountability story back to the legislature in that regard. So, yes, this is what the math looks like, but based on surveys, this is a more informed picture of what's happening with our court reporter world, not just in family law, but also coming out of the Jameson.
I guess if you want to depict it that way, that's fine, but I didn't hear anything about surveys or actually finding out what's on the ground.
That's helpful. I mean, I think that would be good in terms of...
And my concern is if we say, well, we gave every court X amount of money, that really doesn't tell the true story because, again, some don't need to spend a penny on it.
Fair. Well, later on we're going to have a discussion about a VCP for that, so that will be part of the information, I think, that for some of the methodology that we're going to use to try and gather that.
I think we all can do 13% back in our offices and chambers, mm-hmm. and I think it would be better if it's just
There is not a formal report that breaks it down, sent out. If all we're really doing is some kind of a calculation. And
I think in light of the fact that the legislature took a formal action and a vote by and affirmed by the governor who could have blue penciled that language, I think it's important that we as partners show something that relates and reacts to that.
Well, show and react would be the survey, right? And rather than prospectively giving numbers, but
cancel and then.
I agree with Judge Buckley. I think that we can and should report back to the legislature that this grant spent more than $10 million, and here's how we spent it. You'll have identified that, as Mike said, using surveying the courts, having the courts report back. But if you break it out in the allocation you give and you set that intent, again, you're going to harm courts like Tanya, for example, and others who already provide it, and you're saying you're identifying in their allocation this 13%, whatever it is.
And I don't think that what we're talking about is that your allocation coming to you is going to show and you're going to get a restricted line item for that.
Well, I'm
rather,
not saying
information
that you'd be pulling it out, right? Isn't that what you talked about, staff?
You identify it as a mathematical.
As they would, the security funding, as they would. I mean,
I
it would just be a table that lays
it
all out.
I think it's a bad idea.
Look, let's look at legislative intent. The legislative intent behind that legislative allocation is essentially an access to justice legislative intent, meaning we want to make sure that family law courts throughout the state are supported by court reporters. And some of us are already doing that, and some of us, for financial reasons, are unable to do it. So I think we're fulfilling the legislative intent if we make sure that our family law courts and the reporters to those courts are funded. So again, I don't know that we need to do a breakout
my recommendation is that we do to meet the because of the legislative action.
Sherry?
To meet the legislative
I'm strongly opposed to doing that, and the examples that we're using in terms of security funding and other funding, those have dedicated line items for those funding columns. This is part of the 75. I think by doing the survey and looking at what it would cost to actually provide court reporters and family law is another way to demonstrate that we're doing that. But breaking it out as if it has restricted funds
right.
like security and others, I think is a huge mistake and should not happen.
I agree. I mean, we essentially report back that we are funding court reporters for family law.
So Judge Conklin, this is Mike Planet, guys.
Is that Judge McCabe?
Mike Planet.
Okay, so it goes Judge Heinrichs, Mike Roddy, then Mike Planet. Mike, we'll get to you right away. I'm just looking at the other hands. Judge Heinrichs.
So one of the things I think it's really important that at the end of or at some point through we show that $10 million of the 75 went towards the purpose that was stated. How we do that, I think, needs some more work. But it's an example of how this type of funding can work in unfairness. Because a court that has an ongoing expense because they were either able to or decided to prioritize family law court reporters while others did other things, then those that made that decision to get rid of those court reporters, if the money just went to them, it's an unfairness because even though it says not just their plan. So I think the challenge is how do we make sure that we document that at least $10 million were spent towards this goal that was set by the legislature, recognizing that it would be unfair to just have that money go to those that didn't do it in the past because that would be somewhat of a windfall for making that decision. So I think because of the new case law, everybody's looking at it in a new way. I think there's some rural areas that even if you wanted to get more court reporters into your courtroom, you aren't going to be able to because they're not even available to come. They don't live in our county. They aren't there. So I think really focusing on that, I think it'll be clear that that the $10 million will be met and the need is well over that amount of money if we start looking at it through a survey.
So Judge Margin standing out the side there now in the room. Mike Roddy? Okay. Mike Planet?
Yeah, I just want to underscore the comments that have already been made about the logistics of trying to track our court reporter assignment for family law. I mean, for example, my court, we pool court reporters. And so are we going to have to how do I distinguish the time we spent assigning them to family law versus complying with the new ruling regarding civil court reporters. It's just going to be a very difficult thing to track and report on. So we're going to need to be clear on what kind of direction we need so that we can accurately report our usage. And another practical matter, you know, my percentage of the 10 million comes to less than a full-time court reporter, you know, the equivalent salary and benefits of less than one full-time. So I concur with the comments that it's going to be difficult to track and report this information without some more clearer guidance.
Lucy?
Yeah, so I absolutely think the survey is a good idea, but I think for the benefit of the council themselves, they're going to want to see how those numbers fall. I know you could go do the math, but I think for our report to the council, they're going to want to see the breakout.
Right. A report like that is concerning to me. I'm a court that chose to make cuts in other areas and fully support our family law area with court reporters. So I'm wondering what a report would look like when I see that money that has funds associated with the court reporter. And then at the end of the year, I already have done it before that comes in. What is that going to translate into? And I think other courts probably feel that way as well. So having it split out by individual courts, I think holds us to requirements that we're not going to be able to meet. We do it all 58 courts.
I want to get
58
all those
courts. I don't have a problem.
So I'm going to add a comment, and it may be apples and oranges, but in fact, lessons we might have learned from state of legislative intent regarding other funds. And there is a legislative intent that that's the way the money be spent. I'm stating what they said. They said it. So how do we help Zlotko do his job when you go through the next year and they say, well, hold it, we said 65-10, so you can you help us understand how that 10 went to that? So what are some options there? So I want to make sure I got all the hands in order, so I think it was Chad and then Sherry. Chad?
So I guess to start, I just want to say I agree with the concerns that Nancy has raised. I mean, we're in the same position, right? We made cuts in other areas so that we can continue to do that. And I'm concerned, the language that concerns me is the do not supplant. Because if you break it out, you know, I'm just trying to do the rough math. It's sort of, okay, my 13% would be $374,000. And I'm worried that the do not supplant would be, okay, well, we then expect that you're going to spend $374,000 more on top of what you already spend, and then, you know, they're just going to get into a whole labor thing. So, Judge, but to answer your question, couldn't it be sort of a dual survey, sort of survey the lay of the land pre-$10 million and say, what are courts doing, and then survey the lay of the land post-$10 million? Hey, look, here's $10 million more in value. In fact, maybe it's $12 million. You know, maybe some people will take more than the $10 million and do more.
Comments I heard is almost everybody's going to. They're going to have to. But Tanya and then Mike.
Well, several of these issues, and I support what Nancy said. You know, we're in court, and Kim, I'll just sort of toss this out there. We've been having to provide in this particular area for years by statute. So we've taken huge cuts in other areas to ensure that not just family law, but across the board, say traffic and complaints, we have reporters everywhere. So, how do you deal with the, you know, supplant language? That is a real problem for me. So, I wouldn't want to get too far in the weeds with this. I think we can let them know what we've done, and I think the big issue would be is to identify what the total need across the state is for that, and then, you know, attack their BCP if that's the way you want to go.
Mike and then Sherry.
Obviously, the legislative intent. My read of it is that there's a court reporter in all family law courtrooms. What if that's only a $6 million fix, given the non-supplant language? I mean, we keep saying it's going to go, but what I'm hearing around the table are a lot of large courts, other than mine, who are already basically providing that service. And so we keep saying it's going to be easy for us to get the $10 million. If it's not, and we don't get to that threshold, I still think we have to be honest in reporting. In fact, given the not supplant language, this is what it actually took. If it's more than 10, that's great. But the courts are going to be essentially forced into the expenditure of money in this area by virtue of Jamison and the legislative intent.
the most benign way to do that is to survey the courts both before and after, and to give Zlotko the baseline and the delta that he can then report back to the legislature. But to allocate the money in a line item, I think, does set up a false belief or promise or hope that the courts are somehow going to make that magical $10 million, and frankly, some of them aren't. They're not going to be able to do that. So let's focus on the ones that didn't do it or can't do it, and what how they're going to spend this new money.
Sure.
I think it's pretty much already been said, and I don't think the Judicial Council wants to see it. You make it sound like they're going to want to see it. I think they're going to want to know that we follow the legislative intent, and I think you are that a spreadsheet that would create a column that shows what your percentage would be of the $10 million will now create an expectation for the council to even ask for a comparison where if you're statutorily mandated to provide and you can't increase it, that's a problem. So I think that we would be creating a problem that's not there, and we need to put in the report that it is the branch's intent to comply with the legislature's desire to increase spending for court reporters and family law, that we intend to do a survey, that we intend to help the trial courts understand the goal of the legislature, and I think we all know that already, but I think a spreadsheet that would create a column would set an expectation in everyone's mind, including a legislator who may be in Tanya's county who says, well, why didn't you spend a dollar more? Well, you know, because the statute over here makes me already provide them. So I think we need to look at this at a branch-level position and do a survey before and after to ensure that at least $10 million have been provided. And I think that we need to provide to the council the information it needs to ensure that we've complied with that legislative intent, and breaking it out by county does not do it and creates additional problems.
Rebecca?
I agree with many of the comments, and I think one of the bigger problems of creating the spreadsheet is that I'm not sure that we could accurately report what we've been doing, because you have a plan and then you have reality, and for those of us who are pulling court reporters in a pool situation, not tracking, I mean, I could go back and I just pull all kinds of calendars and things like that, but is that the end result that we want? And so I can give you my plan, I can tell you approximately half the family law courtrooms got covered, but that wasn't the plan. And so I'm not sure the accuracy would be there for where we've been going forward as far as what did we get accomplished with that money. I think, you know, knowing up front what we have to track, I think is more doable. But I am concerned about what we would be reporting out from going back because of a pool situation.
So I'm just trying to sort of summarize the comments and the concern, the focus of the concern. And it appears that the focus of the concern is we all recognize the need as best we can to fund family law court reporters, and the legislature has told us that, and it actually, we have to find some way to deal with it. It said 65-10, but there's some courts that already do that. There's some courts that already have spent the money they need to have family law court reporters. So whatever the 65-10 for them is not going to enhance their ability to provide the court reporters if they already do it. But I think we can appropriately message that we understand the legislative intent, that to the degree that they said 65-10, that trial courts use the funds necessary beyond those, let me know, it's just the opposite. The trial court use the funds necessary if they have not been able to accomplish staffing family law court reporters within the 65-10 proportional to get family law court reporters. Now, if you already have it, if you already have family court, I don't want to be too presumptuous here, because I wasn't in the room, but I would tend to think the legislature might not be too concerned. If you're already spending it for family court reporters and you've done what we ask you to do, all the better. If you haven't, and sometimes, you know me, sometimes I just try to get too simplistic. If you haven't done anything for family law court reporters, and you don't spend a dime for family law court reporters of your proportion of the $75 million, I think that might create some legitimate criticism from the outside, and we have to recognize that. So how do we message that? Mike Brody?
I don't think there was anything scientific in the 10. I think somebody just grabbed that number. And so, again, I think the obligation is to provide from a branch-wide perspective a court reporter in all family law courtrooms.
for all family law proceedings. That's the objective we focus on. And if that takes $6 million, we need to report that back. If it takes $12 million, we obviously report that back. I'm not so focused on the $10 million. I think that was really designed to effectuate the intent that every family law courtroom have a court reporter. If we can report back and achieve that objective, I think we'll be okay with the legislature.
Chad, just say you want. Oh, sorry.
Chad. Just to build on what Mike said, too, and not to get too far afield, but a part of the report back also ought to be the supply and demand issue, because we may not, I mean, if the goal is one reporter in every family law courtroom across the state, regardless of how much that costs, given the current supply of court reporters, that may not be possible before the money gets swept at the end of this year. I mean, that's if we all started doing our absolute best to hire right now, I'm not sure we'd have all those courtrooms filled up by June 30th of next year. So that, I mean, that should be a part of the report as well, just that we're trying, right? But there's only as many court reporters as there are out there.
And just Jim Herman, I just add that, you know, reiterate that what's already been made, the comment that's already been made, and that is, you know, many of our courts, including my court, we pool our reporters. I mean, just the bookkeeping in terms of determining what reporter A is doing in terms of civil this day, and then on the family law calendar the next day doing part of the family law calendar, and then going out to a criminal assignment. It's just logistical difficulties as well.
My only comment was that we did a survey this spring to respond to some of these questions, and depending on how much sort of relief you thought you needed, $22 to $28 million gap, you know, on the margin above what has already been spent. But the total need was for family was in the high 50s.
But I think the problem with that, Slotko, as I understand it, is it didn't assume the non-supplant language.
No, this was only, I mean, this assumed that everybody was spending what they were spending already, and this was the gap.
But I think the non-supplant language put a twist into that whole argument because, again, you've got courts that are doing it now, and maybe somebody wisely on the legislator's part said, you know, if they're already doing it, why would we give them money to continue doing it? I think that's what put a twist in this, and we may not make the $10 million. I think they just pulled that number out from, you know, saying if we don't supplant, maybe it's only a third of what the total defined need or a fifth of it is. Let's find out.
That math assumed that everybody was still spending their base, and it was only the marginal difference between total need, so it didn't assume that this was supplanting. So this $10 million, in their mind, is less than the total need to fill the gap.
And given the supplant language, I'm going to be interested to see, frankly.
That's the case. As one of the minority or court that we have court for in the family law, so the money will help us.
Judge Heiner?
Well, you know, I don't want to sort of be too detailed. I mean, we provide a court reporter in our family law when they're not needed elsewhere. And so we don't have a court reporter that says this is a family law court reporter. And so if we use money and say now this court reporter, that's their first place they go is family law, then, you know, is that really supplant because we're using it in a different way? I mean, I think the hard part is that, and again, I said it before, but that's sort of the unfairness about new money that does not supplant is each court made their decision and all of us gave things up. And we chose what we were going to keep individually. And so now, and, you know, we were, if you decided to keep a family law attorney because you could or make other cuts, you're sort of ahead of the curve because now the legislature says that's an important thing, but there's case law that says that now. So the money that comes in really should go to all the courts because it backfills other things. You may have closed your clerk's office to keep a court reporter. You may have done something else to keep a court reporter, but that was an individual decision that was made. So I think I don't know how you capture it, but I think that that's how we might educate the legislature about the do not supplant language, because everybody had to make decisions. It wasn't like most were able to sort of have a supply of riches and keep everything they wanted to keep. Everybody had to cut something, and if they decided to keep one thing over another, when you give that money for it, then you're hurting everybody by not letting it be shared.
Sherry?
So I'm going to kind of take us back. We all approved the proportional share just to bring up to speed. Number two. What we're talking about now, and I've spent a lot of talk about, is our feeling to Judicial Council staff's recommendation to create an FYI column of how it would be allocated. Right?
Well, it was coming more from me, yes. But you're right, and
okay.
We can't lose sight of the fact that, and regardless of whatever, wherever this discussion gets us, the $75 million is going to be allocated proportionally.
Right.
And
so,
it's not going to be physically allocated
right.
in two different, the court's not going to get two different allocations.
I know, but it's going to be a column as if there's an expectation. I think it's a terrible idea, but let me get back to where I was going.
I have before.
We're talking about something that isn't really an action item because we've already taken the action.
Right.
So to help Judicial Council staff know our position, maybe you should ask those of us who believe it's a terrible idea to raise our hand so that they'll get a sense of where we are because we don't have an action item. We've been talking for 45 minutes about something we don't have an action item about.
Agreed. So I think...
Don't call it a terrible idea.
Really? Not an idea that is well received, but all I'm saying is let's not forget what we just went through with the $75 million and what happened because the legislative intent maybe wasn't made particularly clear to us, and now it is. But the legislative intent was made clear here. They said 65-10. So the only reason I bring this up is looking towards staff that then goes into negotiations with the legislature for the upcoming year, and practically speaking, they're going to get the question, tell us how you spent it. So maybe it's not a great idea to put a chart out there saying, implying you should spend it this way. But we do need to come up with something so we show to them we're true to the concern about family law court reporters. And maybe it's as simple as, we heard you, there are many courts that had already heard that message and that they had allocated funding to provide for family law court reporters. And for those courts that hadn't, we thank you very much for that money. And actually, the survey shows that they did use that proportional share, if not more, or as is necessary to provide for family court reporters. I saw it. Rebecca?
So I would just maybe offer a suggestion that we not go any further with this conversation, but rather maybe go back to our courts and figure out what we could provide for information and have the conversation at a later date in terms of what we think that we need to report back to the council with. It's not an action item today, and we do have a recommendation for the allocation, and I think that there are concerns about accuracy and breaking things out and what we have, you know, whether we, I use plan numbers just as an example of a survey, you know, those kind of, if that kind of information, maybe we go back and identify what we have, what we think is appropriate, and we have the conversation at a later.
Call the non-question.
Call the non-question, yeah.
I saw a hand though, David.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I think having an opportunity to go back, now that we kind of got a better view of the landscape, we happen to be one of those courts that provides reporters in family law. We have, 21 judicial positions assigned, but we only had 15 bodies that we could dedicate because we just don't have enough. And if the legislator's intent was to utilize some of that $10 million, we're not, even for a court that's providing them, they're not going to be able to have enough money to provide it to begin with. So I think if we were to go back, we would be able to put together some information that would demonstrate the need for not only the $10 million, and we'll use some of the money that we've received towards expanding reporters and family for sure, but we certainly need a lot more. And I think getting a little more information, let's get a chance to take a look at, now that we know what's going on right now, what's going to be important for us to report and come back and then make that presentation to figure out how that can move forward.
Sure.
But the reason I raise this is because I think that Judicial Council staff is going to be putting spreadsheets together for the Judicial Council for their what we hope will be a conference call in August. And so if this is included, this dialogue was to help explain why we think that may not be as helpful in to the council because the legislative intent we all understand, we support, we talked about a survey before and after, we're all supportive of that. There's other ways to do it. So that's the reason, Rebecca, I don't think your idea.
So
because we're providing guidance on how to prepare the document that goes to the council.
So to use the word that you just used, would it be an accurate depiction either in a report or from my statement to the council that this, that TCBAC as a whole understands and agrees with the legislative intent concerning funding for spending towards family law court reporters? Is that accurate? I'm not saying 6510. I'm saying, I'm just using your words. We understand what the legislature said about spending adequate funds for the purpose of family law court reporters.
That's where I'm at with the intent. I mean, we need to righteously get back there and say, we are now providing coverage in all family law courtrooms. And then the second part of that is at this cost. I think we're getting wrapped around the $10 million as it's somehow, I think that's secondary to the policy, which is the foundation here, which is a family law court reporter in every department.
Right. These are one of those discussions that I really appreciate. I don't want to take us so far off track that we risk members of the council saying, sorry, this is pretty ambiguous, so we're not comfortable now with an August allocation. And I don't think that's where we are, but I think we have to be very careful to stay true to, we recognize the need for family law reporters, and we're not saying there's not that need. Did I see another hand? Kim?
I agree with the comments made, and I do think this is why we suggested intent language to begin with be included in the report. Intent not to identify, but just as you said, we understand that part of the $75 million, the intent was to cover family law court reporters. Breaking it down in a separate column on public documents that will go out, whether it's directed that way or not, you've just set an expectation by doing that, and I don't think that that's going to muddy the $75 million allocation.
Mr. Buckley and then Rebecca.
We had an action item. We voted on it.
Right.
We're going forward. I think direction, clear messages have been given as to what kind of reporting should or should not be done. What I think we're really, really into now is a candid discussion with PJs and CEOs of what really needs to be done with family law court reporters. I believe this conversation should take place at the PJ CEO conference, maybe even in a closed session, where whether it's Sacco, maybe even Martin, really echo what Mike is saying, and that is, at whatever the amount is, those courts who do not have court reporters in family law need to be doing that. There's the thought that we gave you the money to do that.
And does anybody disagree with that sentiment, wherever it comes from? That's exactly what we all agree with and understand. We're giving you this money for family law court reporters.
Rebecca?
But I don't think it's my
word. I understand the concern about if we stated that directly in a in an allocation chart, then it's being interpreted as a mandate versus...
Right. Our charge is to give a recommendation to the council as to how the money should be allocated. We've done that. Other issues of dealing with the legislature in advocacy for 2019-2020 is tied with Mike's comments that we need to show that we have done our best and hopefully have done it such that there are now court reporters in all courts in family law, which is feasible with number of court reporters out there and or money.
Rebecca.
In their direction, did the Judicial Council ask for a breakout of information on the court reporters?
Okay, they spoke, but there were no reference to the 65 and the 10 and the intent language. So
and I apologize, I don't have the language around it, but was the direction that we should have some kind of informational piece about that, notwithstanding the staff's intent to try and provide all kinds of information. I appreciate that, but if they haven't asked for some kind of a breakout, I think that breaking it out is, I completely agree with all of the statements. I think it's a problem. I think it's an accuracy issue, and I think if we need to show our commitment to the intent, or not commitment, but the acknowledgement of the intent, I think then that goes in the report. You know, but if they didn't ask for it, I'm not sure why we're.
But I think that's what Judge Conklin is attempting, is how, what language could you have us include in the report that acknowledges that? And there's been resistance to even some sort of statement like that, because I think he stops, I'm speaking on behalf, and now they're sitting back down.
that he's been trying to get at is what can we say
we
about
understand
that
the legislature's intent?
And what are we doing about it?
Have they asked us to do anything about it yet, other than to, I mean, we could say...
Well, the legislature has expressed intent to spend, to allocate $10 million intent for court reporters.
Yeah, that's me. I disagree. I think the legislature intends for us to provide court reporters and family law, and in their opinion, that may tend to providing $10 million for that purpose. Again, I think it is what it's going to be, what it's going to be, but that's the real intent for me, is that we deal with family law. And that however we get to that mechanism, that we have the ability to report back by the end of the year that all courts are, in fact, complying with the legislative intent and providing that service. I'm less focused on the $10 million. I understand that that was the placeholder, but to me it's that broader policy that I'm focusing in on. Whatever that costs, I mean, that's going to cost me $4+ million. I'm not. It's going to be whatever it's going to be. My job is to put a court reporter in every family law court. Period.
I don't believe there's any language that we can give that doesn't indirectly or directly suggest that that $10 million has to be paid, and we don't know if it is. And we made our allocation, and then if there are political or other reasons why leadership of the council should be directing these courts, I think that's at the PGA CEO meeting.
I mean, on the flip side, my 13% buys not even 4 court reporters. So should I limit my expenditure to only providing 4 court reporters for the 22 departments that I need to cover? No.
Well, the preference is to increase the level of court reporter.
Yeah, but four isn't going to even nibble around the edge for me. That's why I'm less focused on the dollar per se, and I'm in it's decidedly the opposite camp. But to me, it's that same analysis, which is I'm going to provide that service. Yes, it's going to take money from other things that I might do, but I understand the intent is to cover family law 100%. And I think that's where I continue to focus my energy.
Judge Harmon?
Do you know who was the legislative sponsor of that particular language? Who's the legislator that was?
I don't know the legislators that was behind it.
I know Hannah Beth Jackson, which is a family law lawyer.
I think court reporters has been an issue that's been discussed throughout the legislature, and they obviously know that it's been something that has been sought by our labor groups for many years as far as the specific allocations. In fact, there was one house that at one point one version had a specific increase for it. So it's been discussed broadly within the legislature.
Sherry?
So I know we're looking for language. So how about something along these lines? Recognizing the legislative intent to increase court reporters in family law, the judicial counsel staff will work with trial courts to increase that, then you can put in, but using the words recognizing the legislative intent, we'll work with those courts who are currently not providing to assist them, we'll do a survey before and after. I mean, I think you can do those sorts of things. I think that would be a lot better than creating a spreadsheet that is going to be difficult for many and will set an expectation not only in the minds of the judicial council members, but in the local legislators as well. So I think that you can say, recognizing the intent, we'll work with those courts that currently don't provide, do whatever. You can add some things there that would certainly, we'll provide training at the PJ CEO meetings, that kind of thing.
You see us scurrying up, I want to make sure we all actually have that extra language so we see what it was as we make these comments. By the way, just sort of sidestepping it for a moment, we approved the $75 million, I'm turning to Orange County, $75 million going up for proportional share, but I also made clear that you had communicated with me as early as 4:45 this morning saying we want to be there for votes. And so we did agree that if either of the two of you have a concern or would vote against the proportional share, that we give you the opportunity to do that.
That was option 2, is that
right? And there was some amendment to the language to include in Roman numeral 3 discretionary fund. Was
any problems with that? Thanks very much.
Well, and I should indicate that I have Judge Lucas's proxy, and can we add her vote to that as well?
Yes.
Thank you.
We were talking about who had that, so thank you.
And then Judge Maragonda, did your motion include the second recommendation in the report too, which is to refer the issue of court reporters to WAC, which need inclusion in RAD?
Kim, is that what you and
I'm sorry, I didn't
hear. The language number two in the recommendation that refer the issue of court reporters and civil being part of RAS to the workload is to WAC.
Yes.
Right. Judge yes. Maragonda said yes, and
yes.
Judge Herman, you intended to include that as a second to the motion.
Yes.
Okay. Staff just needed that clarification.
May I add a comment to the discussion about court reporters?
Of course.
Just to follow up on what Chad said, I see two battles here. One battle, and that's the one that's taken up the majority of the time, is what to do about the $10 million legislative intent and how do we apportion the money and so on. I think the second half of the battle is actually, I think, more serious, is finding enough reporters to employ if we had all the money in the world. Numbers are easy to understand, they're objective and so on. It's more difficult to show the shortage of court reporters, mostly anecdotal stuff. And I can tell you in Orange County, we've had an open, ongoing recruitment for reporters for the last several years, and we lose more reporters than we gain. Now, admittedly, at the end of 2012, we reduced their hours from 40 to 35 because of financial issues, and that cost us a number of reporters who went to adjoining counties. We increased the hours to 37 and a half at the end of last year, and hopefully we can be in a position where we can increase it to 40. But the point is, the reporters move around, but it's not like new reporters are coming onto the scene. So at what point do we also let judicial counsel know that that's a problem independent of the $10 million issue, and also when you look at the Jameson versus Desta decision, that makes the problem even more acute because by implication that calls for reporters in every non-mandated case type where there is an indigent party who requests a reporter. Is that something we leave for another day, or and we just have the language that everybody's been talking about? You know, what do we do about the $10 million? Or do we throw that in a footnote, or do we just flat out say, we've got a real problem here, folks. We don't have enough reporters to go around.
Sherry?
So you could add that to how we're going to work together, to, you know, recognizing the intent, how we're going to work together to try to ensure that we promote additional availability. I mean, that could be another indication of how we're going to work together. Because you're right, we've got ongoing recruitments and we can't recruit them either.
I think the council is acutely aware of the supply and demand issue and, in fact, discussed that during the meeting. And I think that may come up as we talk about the BCP, but I think they were very interested in exploring the ways in which to make a verbatim record of the proceedings, whether that be through the use of a court reporter or other technological means. So all we would do, I think, is bolster their already expressed belief that this has got to be more than just about court reporters.
So the exact language is as follows. Of the discretionary $75 million appropriated in Schedule 1 of this item for allocation according to a methodology determined by the Judicial Council, which now we've already voted on and approved. So we're that's taken care of. We're using the proportional share methodology. It is the intent of the legislature that $10 million be utilized to increase the level of court reporters in family law cases. Further, it is the intent of the legislature that the $10 million not supplant existing trial court expenditures on court reporters in family law cases. That's the language out of the budget bill.
The committee recognizes.
Right. So the committee recognizes that the language of the budget, the committee recognizes the language of the budget bill as follows, and we put that in the report. And this is expressed and made clear to all trial courts in receiving their allocation. Just stating the obvious, but we're stating to the council in the report and therefore to the legislature, we got your message and we're delivering that message directly to the trial courts. Maybe we're not putting in a chart dollar for dollar because I understand the perception that creates, But we are saying, we heard you, and we're telling the trial courts exactly what you said. At the end of the day, and it's for a later discussion, if, and again, I know sometimes I exaggerate inappropriately, if a court says, thanks so much for that, but we decided we don't need family law court reporters, that I think that's going to be a difficult discussion to have. But that would not happen. That would not happen.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Then there's a burden upon each court to demonstrate that if they didn't, because there wasn't a need, that they would be demonstrating that. So that then we could say, this is where it was used and why it was used and how it, in the circumstances of X court, that money was able to support some other sort of expansion of access to justice.
Why we want to get broad. Agreed.
Because absent that,
we, as much as we've done in the first part of not being using our funding methodology, the second part from an accountability standpoint of the presentation to the legislature will be a question that will be asked.
Yeah, I haven't heard any comment today, and if I'm stating this incorrectly, please let me know, but I haven't heard any comment today that there is a court that thinks that it's not important to have an adequate family law court reporter funding and provide family law court reporters as necessary to increase access to justice. That's not the message I've heard this committee discussing today. All I've heard them discussing today is when we get our actual allocation and those physical dollars and then issues related to the detail of that allocation. So the report should include that language. And that's been a very festive and interesting discussion, and I think productive in that sense. We haven't judged, I think, Judge, who was it, Herman or somebody said this isn't an action item. And if not, there's no additional action to take. We've unanimously approved the $75 million proportional share allocation methodology, and this language will be included in the report.
Sherry said it was an action item, and I said.
You agree.
Question.
Before we call it Judge Copen, then Judge Buckley.
Well, I'm not clear. When you say this language, the language you read didn't say it is that the committee recognizes.
I can give the little.
Okay.
So the committee recognizes the language of the budget bill as follows.
That's
I didn't write that part down.
Exactly.
And this is expressed and or this will be expressed and made clear to all trial courts in providing their allocation.
Okay, great.
Given that clear direction to staff, may I ask or suggest that you ask us if anyone opposes that as chair, you suggest, or whatever the right language, to the council that they make a decision in August. And that way you could tell, assuming that it goes this way, you could tell those that it was a unanimous request on behalf of Take Back that a meeting take place in August.
Is anybody on this committee opposed the direction to the chair that the chair communicated through ENP to the Judicial Council that this committee unanimously requests, recognizing the other commitments of the council that they hold a meeting on August 16th for the purpose of the $75 million allocation methodology standing alone? Any objections to that? Thank you, Judge Buckley. You showed that was unanimously requested of the chair. I'm just trying to see as far as the schedule goes for the day. We're still very well on track. Judge Austin has joined us, who's the speaker that's going to come in on the. So, lunch is here. I'm going to suggest, as chair, that we take 20 minutes. We get that. We come back in. We restart up at noon. And then take all the time necessary to just finish these other items, and if we're done before 2, all the better. So we're going to go off the recording until noon. For those listening in, we'll make every effort to begin again at 2 o'clock, at 12 noon. Welcome back, all. I'm sorry we're a few minutes past where we said we would be, but we are keeping this meeting on track. We're just going to stay on our scheduled agenda items. So we've completed items 1 and 2, and we now move to item 3, the allocation methodology for the self-help funding, and Kristen is with us to present this. Thank you.
All right, so the report for this discussion can be found in your material. So as background, this committee has previously reviewed and approved a population allocation methodology for 2018-19 self-help allocations totaling the $30.3 million, and this amount includes that increase of $19.1 million in 2018-19. The methodology for self-help funding was unchanged for 2018-19, except for an update to the population data used for that allocation methodology. And then this methodology was approved by the Judicial Council at its July meeting. So the purpose of today is to consider two potential for allocating the self-help funding for 2019-20 and beyond. These two potential revisions are an update schedule for population data and then increases to baseline funding. All right, so with regard to the population data update schedule, the issue is how often should the data be updated going forward. So after discussion at the July FMS meeting, the recommendation is to adopt a 3-year update schedule using a rolling 3-year average. This schedule, as well as using the 3-year average data, will mitigate any extreme changes and avoid large funding shifts for the trial courts
compared to if an update was done more infrequently or using single-year data. Additionally, FMS is recommending that staff provide an informational-only update to the trial court so that they're aware of any shifts to population that may impact funding at the three-year update to the allocation. So that is the information on the population update schedule. The other potential revision is increases baseline funding. The current allocation is $34,000 per court. And so although this dollar value reflects the amount it was originally calculated to represent, the recommendation for now is to maintain this baseline amount and revisit in 2021. This recommendation is based on a number of changes impacting self-help funding. The increase of the $19.1 million in 2018-19, changes to allocation amounts due to the population update in 2018-19, as well as a programmatic change requiring the courts revert any unspent funds from the 2018 budget act. So additionally, the 2021 date to revisit the baseline funding is recommended because a cost-benefit analysis will be conducted in November 30, 2020, report to legislature. This analysis may provide additional information to guide a discussion on the baseline funding amount. So those are the two issues. So this is an action item, and so in summary, the recommendations for self-help funding are threefold. One, adopt a three-year population update schedule using rolling three-year average census data from the California Department of Finance. Potential change in self-help allocation in 2022. Number two, for information purposes only, Judicial Council Budget Service staff will provide annual updates of three-year average census data from the California Department of Finance. This informational only update would be for 2019-20. And then the third recommendation is to maintain the current baseline allocation of $34,000 per court and revisit in 2021 after the November 30, 2020 report to the legislature.
Kristen, thank you very much. Comments before we go ahead?
I'm going to make the motion that we approve the staff recommendation.
Okay, Mike Roddy has made a motion that we approve the recommendations as set forth in page 22 of the materials. Yamasaki seconds. Discussion? Anybody want to add anything, concerns about this? It was a well-drafted report. Thank you very much, and thanks again to FMS, especially now being chaired by Judge Buckley and Rebecca for the work they've done on this. Thank you very much.
I think it's a good idea, too, because 3 years of the same as the draft, and the work for the 3 hours.
I agree. Okay, hearing no additional requests for comments, does anybody oppose the recommendations as set forth on page 22 of the report? That's recommendations 1, 2, and 3 from FMS. Any opposition from those members participating on the phone? Hearing and seeing no opposition, the recommendations at page 22 of the report are unanimously approved by the TICFAC members.
Okay,
and now we're moving to item 4, the allocation methodology for the interpreter program shortfall. Cottrell is with us to present on this, and we've also are being joined by Judge Austin, who sits on the language access, I want to make sure I say this right, the language access task force. So Cottrell is going to give us a report, but I just want to preface these comments with information provided to me or comments to me as the chair of TICFAC, even though there's no public comment. Justice Cuellar contacted me, and I informed Justice Cuellar that I would share his comments or concerns with this committee, and I'm doing that now as follows. The LATF, Language Access, the task force continues to work with JC Budget Services as well with JBBC to develop a BCP that will provide an infusion of funding to interpreter funding. Secondarily, leadership of LATF, including Justice Cuellar, does not believe it is necessary or advisable to impose restrictions on the reimbursement for interpreter services in civil proceedings. Additionally, leadership of the LATF is concerned that the failure to reimburse those civil proceedings would effectively roll back a brand policy of offering interpreters in civil matters. And then finally, Judge Austin is with us today and will present after Cottrell presents to express those concerns and answer any questions TICFAC members may have. So you will notice I was reading that.
When I communicated with Justice Cuellar, I told him that I would do my best, as verbatim, to communicate the concerns he shared with me. So he is, those concerns are coming from Justice Cuellar as leadership of LATF and communicated to TCBAC. And with that, Cottrell?
All right. As many of you know, current projections for the court interpreter program indicate that the fund balance has been depleted, and with expenditures exceeding allocation, the fund will become installment this fiscal year. A detailed display of the projected expenditures and the projected fund balance can be seen on pages 27 and 28 of your material. Now, on one occasion when court interpreter expenditures have exceeded the appropriation, as was the case in 08-09, the funding shortfall was covered by a one-time funding allocation by the Judicial Council. But prior to that, and up until recently, there has been sufficient fund balance to address instances where expenditures have exceeded the appropriation. That being said, and taking into consideration current projections, the funding methodology at its most recent subcommittee meeting recommends that effective October 1st of this year, funding be discontinued for all civil matters at the local level in the current year, and also ask that the committee direct Judicial Council Budget Services staff to notice all courts of any pending motions.
And I just want to clarify, and then Judge Austin's going to speak to us as well. This is not a request from FMS to take back that the funding be reduced or cut. This is a request from FMS to TCBAC that the current funding, given the current amount of the fund, that the courts be informed as to that what the money is going to cover and what it's not. With that, Judge Austin?
Okay. Thank you all for giving me the opportunity to speak today. I'm here today on behalf of the Language Access Plan Implementation Task Force. I know many of you. I've been doing language access activities with the courts for, it's got to be a decade now, it seems like. And it's amazing to me where we've ended up, that we're at this point now where and I'm going to go into it in some detail, of pretty much full implementation. And I really am concerned that the proposed activity may cause us some problems with that. Justice Cuellar sends his regards. We've already heard from his statements. He asked me to come here today in the hopes that we can come up with a plan that would address very real fiscal concerns outlined in the materials without discontinuing, even temporarily, the essential courtroom interpreter services that have already been so successfully implemented across the state. Services that have allowed our state's 7 million limited English speakers to have access in our courts to unlawful detainer, guardianship, conservatorship, elder abuse, civil harassment, all family law, debt collection proceedings, and all other civil cases. Services that have allowed our judges to truly do their jobs by permitting litigants to fully participate and communicate during the court process. The latest stats show that through the hard work and efforts of those in our trial courts, these services certainly have been successfully implemented. As of the beginning of this year, 51 of our 58 trial courts report that they are providing interpreter services in all 8 priority levels under Evidence Code Section 756. And the remaining 7 courts were mostly in small courts, so the amount of coverage, if you think of the total population covered by all 8, is extremely high. It's got to be 95% of the population of the state. But the remaining 7 courts are still working on it, and they expect to fully expand in the near future. It's really an amazing accomplishment, what we've accomplished as a branch in such a short period of time, just over a couple of years. While we on the task force occasionally hear that we haven't moved quickly enough to fully expand, the massive efforts to provide these services have generally been praised by all of the stakeholders in the process. With that, I'm talking by judges, CEOs, court staff, court interpreters, LEP litigants, legal aid attorneys, the Department of Justice, the legislature, and the governor's office. We hear from all of those stakeholders frequently, and they all participate in our community forums. They participate in other input that we have as we're going through with the implementation process, and all have really uniformly supported what we've done. They're very popular services, and I'm certain that if the stakeholders would be very concerned if these services are suddenly discontinued. Because these services are so popular, we've had great success in obtaining funding for them. Your materials will show that in the 2016-2017 state budget, there was included ongoing $7 million that was labeled to improve access for LEP court users by providing interpreter services in civil proceeding. And that's ongoing $7 million. This fiscal year, we obtained an additional one-time appropriation of $4 million in order to, as in the budget materials it was summarized, continue to expand the availability of interpreter services. And we have every reason to believe that the legislature and the governor will continue to authorize additional funding for these popular services in the future. I can certainly understand concern over the fact that the financial cushion that has been provided by the fund balance from the interpreter fund is now nearly exhausted. But from the perspective of somebody who has been involved with interpreter funding issues for many years, and I'm not the only one, I see lots of faces in this room who have been on this journey with me, this is something that has been anticipated for a really long time. About 5 or 6 years ago, I was the chair of a special task force that was formed to figure out what to do with the ongoing fund balance that is, at its highest was about $13 million. Chad Finke was the lead of that group in a past life when he was over with the council. And I think Judge Cope was on the group as well, if I remember right. We had many meetings, studied many levels of statistics, balanced lots of what was going on and different considerations on what to do with the fund balance and how to try to attempt to deal with the many complicated issues that were presented with that fund balance that was continuing to grow at the time. We ended up, one of the things, based on our recommendations, the council decided that all of the fund balance that was there was going to be used only for paying for court interpreter services. There were, at the time, was going through the dark days of budget, and there were other people trying to move some of the fund balance into other areas to cover other things, non-interpreter related, but it was very clear from the council that it would be only for interpreter services. One of the reasons for that is because at the time, we were looking at a number of areas that would need new funding. Civil expansion was on the horizon, and all of us knew that there was going to be new funding needed for that. We were at various stages of labor negotiations in all four of the regions, and everyone involved in the process knew that we were going to need some new funding to cover any raises that were negotiated. And we suspected that increased demand for traditional interpreter services in criminal and juvenile will also require new funding. The big problem was that it would be extremely difficult to obtain new funding as long as we had a surplus of interpreters' funds, that's the fund balance, being carried over from year to year to year. We had that big cushion. We weren't going to be able to get any new funding to spend on all the new things that were coming down the pipe. So what ended up happening is that the fund balance, augmented by the additional funding for civil expansion that I've already described, has been used to pay for the increased costs in all of the areas listed on the projected expenditure charts in your materials. So increased usage in criminal and juvenile, increase having to do with raises, negotiated labor costs, and for civil expansion. It's allowed us to gradually spend down the surplus or the fund balance over the last 3 years while we've been able to at the same time use that time to develop really hard data projections of how much all this stuff is going to cost. Those projections are in your materials and actually have resulted in what was presented here and at the subcommittee a couple of weeks ago. And those projections are being utilized to form our BCP, which is for the next fiscal year, and the request is $11 million, and we have hard data projections that are able to show the need. finance, the legislature has been aware of, they've known about the fund balance. Our finance people, Zarko, I know, it's been something that's been a topic of discussion for a long time, that we're getting to a point now that once we spend that off, now it's time to really have a hard discussion as to what the needs are. And these are needs that are very popular with the legislature and with the governor's office, and they understand that those things need to be funded. I think it's fair to say that we had hoped for a smoother landing when we were bringing the fund balance down to zero. It's been a pretty bumpy landing, I could say. But the landing is a temporary one. So we ask that it be treated as such in a way that keeps these services in place while ensuring that any shortfall in funds available for reimbursement this year do not end up coming at the expense of the individual trial courts. As a former PJ and a member of the executive committee of the PJ group, I know what a huge impact such an unexpected hit to a court's budget would have. So what could be done? One thing would be to seek a special augmentation to the interpreter fund for 18-19 to cover any anticipated shortfall. Another would be to seek early assurance from the Judicial Council that any shortfall from the fund for this unique year would be covered by the General Trial Court Trust Fund. That's what happened the last time that there was a shortfall in 08-09. We have some other ideas as well that we would be happy to share with the committee. So what we propose is that this matter perhaps be discussed more generally here and maybe sent back to the subcommittee so that we could explore those options and any other that you guys could come up with to address this temporary glitch in funding. At the very least, it will allow people to look at this with more information, with more input, especially input from the stakeholders. None of them who really know what's going on, because it's all happened so quickly. And I'm certain they would like to be heard. Once again, thank you for so much for the opportunity to speak to you. And I'm here to participate in the discussion. Any questions that you have, I'd be happy to address.
Richard, awesome. Thank you. So moving formally, the recommendation set forth on page 29, before we consider that recommendation, comments, concerns, Sherry?
So I agree with everything Judge Johnson said. In fact, this recommendation from the funding methodology kind of broke my heart because we've done a lot in Los Angeles. I think we're a leader in expanding interpreters, but we just don't have the funds. The concern is that if we're $3.4 million short this year and $9.9 million short next year and $11.7 million short the year after that, we really need to find a way to get, you know, stable funding as we continue to support the expanded access. So the real concern was, Judge Austin, just so we're all on the same page, is we looked at the priority that had been approved by the council and said, well, civil was the lowest priority. So if we can't fund something, we need to let courts know that there isn't money to seek reimbursement. Not that we're telling them they can't do it if they want to and use their own local funds, but just that there won't be funds available, because the worry is if we don't notify the trial court that there may not be funds, when they go to seek reimbursement, it may end up with layoffs or other devastating actions with local courts, because when you get into the end of the fiscal year and you now are not getting any reimbursement and you weren't given a heads up, now you're scrambling to balance your own local budget. So, the unfortunate part that I think the branch is in, because I've been chairing the Revenue and Expenditure Committee for many years, and we've had to make really, really difficult reductions in services, is the Trial Court Trust Fund has a deficit. So even though we have some limited fund balance, it's got a structural deficit problem, and the IMF has got a budget problem. So I have a couple of thoughts, because if we think there's possibility that we're going to get a BCP to fill the hole, that benefits everybody. So I do know that that $4 million was given to the Judicial Council for ongoing support of the trial courts regarding language access. And I would suggest that that money be used for 1 year to provide an opportunity for us to get the BCP. And if we can't, if we're not successful in the BCP, then we're going to have to make tough choices again. Now, I do know that the language that provides that ongoing money specifically excludes it from being used for trial court interpreter services. But I also know that there could be some by the end of August that, you know, those negotiations happen all the time, and you could go and try to do that. Piece of cake, Flacco. Because when you look at what that $4 million is for, I would say this is a greater need to provide interpreters to the trial court. $1 million of it is for signage. And I'm finding it hard to understand why we'd need $1 million ongoing money for signage anyway. So there's $1 million. $1.55 is for infrastructure and equipment. And I would say probably a more important thing to give the equipment a rest and use that as well. $510,000 is for support staff. And it seems to me that we probably need to cover the courts, and it takes time to do some recruiting anyway. And then there's $3 million for language training. So I didn't touch the $600,000 for credential review because I think that's really important. But if you took the rest of it, it would cover the whole this year. And so it seems to me that if we're really committed, which I think the branch is, we need to look at this money and say, go back, try to reappropriate all of it but the credentialing, because I think that's critical this year. Explain that it's one time while we wait for the BCP. If it comes sooner, then we proceed. But it seems to me that covering the interpreters and the trial courts is clearly more important than equipment for VRI, for signage, and for a statewide staff person. So that would be my suggestion, and I think that we should encourage judicial counsel staff to do what they need to do to try to make that reappropriation happen.
David, thank you very much, Conklin. So I'm not a member of the funding methodology subcommittee, but I had the opportunity to actually attend their last meeting when this particular topic came up. I will tell you that the decision that was made relative to this was not easy. But the funding methodology subcommittee, as does TIC back, has to make recommendations to the judicial council on how to spend the money that they have. And in this instance, it's very clear that it was deficient by $3.4 million. A couple of facts that I'm aware of is that we've got a couple of regions that are in the middle of negotiations. That $3.4 million, in my estimation, is going to be bigger because some things are going to happen. Because the compensation that is negotiated comes out of the same money that is used to provide interpreters up and down the state. I also recognize the progress that the language Access Task Force has made in securing additional funding for very, very good reasons. The topics that have been identified, I think, are excellent. I don't know the details in terms of the funding earmarks, but conceptually, I think all of those topics are important to invest some monies into. But I also recognize the great strides that we have taken, having been associated with the Court Interpreter Advisory Panel, the task force chaired by Justice Cuellar as well, and we've made huge strides and have improved access to a lot of people who are not folks here. So it's difficult for us to start scaling back that progress just because of money, but that's where we are. We have to balance the budget. I think it was a few years ago that the Budget Advisory Committee presented an item to the Judicial Council anticipating more funding would come in, so we should not impose reductions on everybody. The Judicial Council responded very negatively to that and made the reductions because the money was not a sure deal. So that's one of the things that is influencing how I would vote on this particular item, but I do think
there may be an opportunity. The language that was included in the recommendation very specifically identifies the reduction of interpreters in civil. And as I had a chance to go back locally.
You mean reimbursement?
Reimbursement.
You reduced the interpreters.
You're right. Thank you very much for the clarity.
Okay.
I was able to go back to my court with this information to figure out how we would respond in such a way. And we may be able to stretch resources to the degree that we can continue to provide some level of interpreters in the civil arena. And maybe we can modify the language to strike it to say reduce the allocations to the different courts in a proportionate share, because traditionally what happens is each court gets a share of the funding year to year, and if that can be used kind of as a starting point to try to make up that $3.4 million, maybe we can get a little bit of everything. We can balance the budget. Maybe we can continue to provide some opportunity to provide the interpreters in civil, all the while realizing we're not going to have a fund balance at the end of the year, but that could help make the argument that we need funding for these very, very important areas that the Judicial Council has identified as a top priority.
Excellent, David. Thank you. And again, what you said, I appreciate that. This is not a recommendation to cut funding by any means. It's just a recommendation recognizing if the funding doesn't change, what it would be covered. So Mike Roddy and then Chad.
This is a real difficult one because, in some sense, the genie's out of the bottle. We were all concerned about going out and expanding language services without the proper foundation in place. We've done that, and in my court, as and others, I'm sure, to pull back on that, given the uncertainty, isn't going to work in the day-to-day. Our judges and employees have become reliant on those services in increased areas. And so I'm one of those courts, probably like Sherry and others, who will simply have to find a way to keep that service going. And not all of our colleagues and courts may feel the same way. Given the conversation, and I think I'd be interested in hearing the possibility of getting the additional augmentations we're seeking, because I don't think it's a glitch, Judge Austin. I think it is structural if you look at the ongoing issue. And we kind of knew this was going to happen, but some of us intuitively thought this was going to happen, both as we increased the level of service and with ongoing labor negotiations. And so I'm all for a pause. I think we need to let people know that, you know, we do have a deficit in the program and that we're going to work the problem. I am concerned about finding ongoing resources. I think Sherry has maybe touched on a real possibility in that regard, and I appreciate that.
It's only a 1 year.
Yeah, because if what we say can be made true, then we can expect the additional ongoing funding from the legislature. I do know these are popular programs. They're popular in my court and in my community. And so rather than starting and stopping and pulling us left and right, we're going to continue down the path. But clearly the day has arrived, and hopefully the deficit creates the attention on this issue that's needed to get it adequately funded. So I will support the pause. I did support the recommendation of FMS because we do have to live within our means. And in some ways, this is another mandated program that's not adequately funded, and we're at that point forced to take it out of our hide. However, saying that, I do understand its importance both to the court and to the community. So I do think to step back and give staff time to work the problem and to work the legislature or DOF or whatever that takes is appropriate. But I do think also at some point we've got to say yes or no. We've got to put the courts on notice. If we fail, this is something you need to plan for at the local level.
Great, Mike. Thanks, Chad.
Sherry made a good point, and it came up at the FMS meeting, which is the CEOs need to know that about this problem, right? And we have the SEAC meeting coming up. But I also hear Judge Austin saying there's a lot of potential irons in the fire for, you know, a lot of different options for maybe fixing the issue. A suggestion I was going to make, but now that I read it more carefully, I'm not sure it works. But in the language of the recommendation, it says funding for interpreter services in civil will no longer be reimbursed for 18-19. I was going to suggest, would it help if we change that to May? But then I see the beginning of the recommendation that says to discontinue. But what I was trying to get at is, you know, in a formal way so that everybody's on notice, but recognize that, well, maybe there will be some Hail Mary this year and the money will come in that we won't have. I would just hate to see a recommendation that says it's absolutely cut off, and then you guys come through with the money, and then we have to go back and take some action to restart the reimbursement. But I don't. I haven't wordsmithed out how that would work.
Yeah. I think in light of this recent augmentation, both the $4 million one time, it funds an important need, and not to sort of diminish the fact that both the legislature and the administration supported the $4 million ongoing, there was a clear sort of need for those services outside of direct services. We're going to get an update later on, so I'm going to steal a bit of staff's thunder on the trial court trust fund fund balance, but we all discussed in the spring, this potential shortfall on the funding backfill for all your operational funds to the tune of upwards of $7 million. Well, revenue projections were such that we aren't going to need to use that $7 million that was set aside to fully fund your allocations. And so I think that the sort of the tone of what Mike was talking about you know, in halting these services, you know, in a short-term fix, one of the first times in my tenure here at the Council that I could say that we actually have a little bit of money in the truck or trust fund, that fund balance could be an option so that we aren't halting this expansion while we work the $11 million BCP to get the 1920 funding. I think that there are some options, and I wouldn't want to now go back 3 months after this BCP was approved by the legislature and administration and say that $4 million is not necessary, be it for signage and all the other needs that are included in that BCP, to now just turn it around for that purpose. It was a fine sort of, you know, expanding while getting new money. We got $7 million 1 year. We got $4 million more. And we're looking for more, you know, over the last, you know, in the budget. But I think that there would be an option that we look at the Trucker Trust Fund balance as a means in this year, see where we are, and maybe even look for some sort of flexibility that I talked about, since it is a popular program, to what extent that the reimbursement in the future projections exceed the appropriation, that there's some budgetable language that allows us to get those augmentations rather than seeking it from the truck or trust fund or to reduce services. I think it's a pretty important movement that we've made as a branch in all these areas for language access. There is an alternative that's not just stop the program reimbursement for a second.
So I know that, and then I'm coming to Sherry, I know that. So we discussed a lot of things, and just to sort of move this discussion along is maybe start to structure some recommendations and alternatives to what FMS came up with. But one would be refer back to staff to prepare a report setting forth all these options. One, a TCTF augmentation. Two, and work with Sherry about the $4 million that she talked about as far as augmenting the fund. And then provide that option to either be R&E or FMS to provide a report back to TIC back in time for Council's November meeting. And in the meantime, notify the trial courts that absent an augmentation or a BCP, and this addresses David's concern, that as early as October 2018, funding for interpreter services from civil may no longer be reimbursed. So they're on notice that if nothing changes, so that's what that I took away from the FMS discussion. We have a responsibility to make sure the council and notify the trial courts that if this doesn't get any better, that courts can't, if they keep spending for civil services, they might go to the well, and the well then let them know. I think we all agree, if you have the money to spend for services, spend it, but you might not be reimbursed for it. So please plan accordingly. We're going to do our best. And in the meantime, prepare these alternatives. Now, we could, as I understand, Zlatko, solve it today. And we could say today, putting a Band-Aid on it, for lack of a better description, we're going to recommend to the council that they simply use the TCTF to augment the fund for the upcoming, for that short time period only. But I know that creates some concerns. Sherry?
Well, I would not agree to using the trial court trust fund balance until I saw a spreadsheet going out multiple years, because I know that we've got a structural deficit, or have always had a structural deficit. And so, you know, I think that we need to be responsible, and I think that
to $9 million the next year and $11 million the next year. You know, we can't, we need to find more permanent solutions, I think, and I think that's great. It is certainly highlighting the problem, and I think it might get the legislature to fund it if it's important. The $4 million I identified, the Senate Bill 847 has language that says it needs to be used, it cannot be used to support trial court interpreter services, which means that if we were going to try to reappropriate it, or at least 3.6 of it to fix the hole, there would have to be work by the end of the session, which is the end of August. So that won't work on your idea if we delay it. All I'm saying, Flacco, is to delay these things a year to give money, to give to allow the services to continue, because to be quite honest, they're not as important as providing interpreters in the courtroom. To buy equipment and you don't have interpreters that can use it, to have ongoing signage at $1 million a year. So my point was, is if we were going to, you're not telling them it's not important, you're just saying, hey, we have this hole, we need to find a source until we can get it fixed. But it can't go on a list because they really only have till the end of August to reappropriate the budget.
David, and then Judge Cope.
So one of the things that I would ask this body to consider is maybe just changing the language. Rather than say eliminate reimbursements for civil proceedings, but rather to say perhaps as a result of the $3.4 million deficit, apportion reductions to the allocations to the court such that each court can continue to fulfill the goals of the Judicial Council in expanding interpreters in the non-mandated areas. And the reason why I say it that way is there may be opportunities where we have an interpreter who's available, and because of this, we may not be able to use the interpreter in civil, when in reality, we would be able to balance the budget further the objectives set forth by the Judicial Council when they set forth that policy. So we all know what we have to do. We're trying to preserve the resources as much as we can, but also continue to provide to the degree that interpreters in some of those other areas, and hopefully we get a BCP or an adjustment, or there's some other action, what have you. But I'm also with Sherry on the fact that it's difficult to commit those monies without really recognizing some of the details of what our financial position happens to be.
Aren't they legislator holding off on allocating additional ongoing money to see what happens with that pilot? One time?
So there were two sets of $4 million, one time and one ongoing. The one time money is in SB 847
right.
For the service expansion, versus the $4 million ongoing for the other language access items is in the main budget.
Yeah.
And so you would have to get those program schedules changed.
Right.
And that would involve an action by both the agreement by the administration and by the legislature. What Lucy's referring to is why is the $4 million in services one time? It was pending the outcome of the video remote interpreted pilot, and the administration wanted to see to what extent that had an impact on the service need. So I know that evaluation is, to how close it is, but I'm sure that the pilots were happening this summer and data gathered. But we're working on, I think those comments about, the growth and the deficit increasing, but that was assuming that there'd be no successful BCP for the $11 million, which would then address that shortfall. But ultimately, there are options, and I think, there are long-term fiscal views that are needed. But in terms of the short run, there's an opportunity, I think, given that we did use the $7 million this most recent past year, that maybe there's an option for us to use a portion of that for the shortfall interpreters without stifling the program's expansion and the successful provision of service to those who need it.
Okay, so I'll answer Judge Cope and then Chad Finke, and then Judge. If I've missed anybody, raise your hand again. Judge Cope?
So there have been
a lot of great, really good ideas, really good options presented, and I'd kind of like to make a motion consistent with Judge Conklin's comments about getting a further staff report, but I'd really need to know how long that kind of thing would take, because I think Sherry's right about the time crunch. So how long would something like that take?
Well, with the timeline of the council meeting dates, I don't believe we can do it in time for September unless we not go to any subcommittees and bring it directly back to TICPAC. Brandy, would we be able to do
that? You could do telephonic revenue expenditure committee, because if it's coming from the Telcourt trust fund balance, but that's where it would go. And we could certainly do a conference call.
So we would have the report prepared with those options. We'd have to maybe flush out those options a little bit. Could be referred back to R&E for a telephonic, for R&E to recommend to make a report to TICPAC. So do we have a TICPAC meeting? But we don't have a TICPAC meeting now in council in September.
Again, that could be an hour.
Right, another telephonic to TICPAC, and then to try to get to the council in September. The worst case scenario is, and I know this creates timing issues, it gets to the council in November. But I think I see us all moving towards, I think Mike Roddy said it, sort of a pause for a moment to say, hey, let's see if maybe we can come up with these options, flush out these options, and then present the most viable option to move forward to the council. In the meantime, however, letting the trial courts know that the train's chugging, and we're trying to change the tracks, but if we don't, that's where we are. So somebody else have their hand up? Oh, I'm sorry, Judge Herman.
Well, this is really important. So really, we're there in terms of providing the civil. Like, given the ideas that have been flashed around the table, I'd just like to go back to Judge Austin and see if those work in the direction that you're thinking of.
I think it would. There are options that are out there, and we've thought of the option as well, the one of seeing if you could tap into that other $4 million. It's not a preferred option, I can tell you that, because it's really needed, all of that, but what we end up going to the legislature with, the Department of Finance. These are what they ask us. What do you really need? Because and we ended up coming up. Olivia and I worked on it. A lot of people to get the areas that we thought were really desperately needed on top of a direct interpreter service.
We can bridge this one short-term gap so that we can build to them.
The one thing though is
Sherry, I realize what the projections are.
So one thing that if there is a pause and there's messaging. It would be great if it didn't, if it said something similar to what David said. I think there's a misperception that the reason that we're having this problem is because of civil expansion.
Yeah.
It's not. The reason we're having the problem is because we've gotten funding for civil expansion. They're happy to do that. It's because of the other areas that have kind of lagged, and I think it's because of we've had the fund balance. And that raises and increased usage in the mandated areas, as you can see from the stats. And when I first started this, it was before we started expansion, the full interpreter fund budget was $94.5 million, so that's just for mandated services. And now the projections are $102 million, and that's in 5 years. So it's gone up substantially, and that's, I think, the primary reason is we haven't been able to get the funding to match the raises and the services in the other areas. On top of it, the new $1.6 million increased, which is for interpreter coordinators, which is there, and that was not specifically funded either, and that's added to the problem this year. The good problem, it's great that we're able to pay for that now, but it's a big bump, too, on top of it. That is causing the struggle.
So I've got Chad, and then Linda, and then Judge Buckley, and then I'm going to come back to Judge Cope. So, Chad?
So I just have what I think is a procedural question clarification. So as I read the recommendation from FMS, it's that TICPAC, quote, discontinue funding for all civil matters. Does TICPAC have the authority? TICPAC would recommend to the council.
Right, correct.
Okay, I just wanted to.
You're right. We can't. TICPAC can't.
That's what I thought, but I just wanted to make sure I understood how many steps are in the process.
And it's a reimbursement. So then, Linda?
I just want to say that we're one of the three courts that were involved in the DRI pilot project. So you know this today, right? But Judge Austin, I know that we're in trouble right now, but in the future, there's going to be efficiencies if it proves to be successful.
Yes.
Because today, Mr. McKay and I were texting each other, but one of my judges to enter court from Merced to Sacramento. It was just like the interpreter being next in the courtroom.
No, reports are going. I mean, there's some glitches. Glitches is my word today. There's glitches in the program, but it's working. Anecdotally, we're hearing it's working really well.
And last week when I was at the NACOM conference, there was a, I forget which court it was, I think Arizona. They've had it for like more than 5 years, and they won an award. There's a lot of efficiency.
Yeah.
Then it was Judge Buckley.
So, several follow-ups. Number one, if we're not willing today to make a commitment to this $4 million being converted, as Sherry said, it's gone, because that's number one. So it sounds like there's not a backing on that, but nonetheless, we need to make that decision. November, it does not make sense. That $3.4 million deficit is really over $5 million if you're stuck telling a court, okay, we made a decision, there's not going to be reimbursement.
And just nothing, but I was just told that if we avoid the subcommittees and come back to tick back, we can probably stay within the September schedule. So just, I think
September
that supports what you were just saying.
And then I was going to be a little flippant and say, if we can ask the Judicial Council to have a phone meeting, I think we can ask ourselves to have a phone meeting. And R&E.
Let's not get lost in that. If we're opposing the Judicial Council to a phone meeting for the 75, I think we can do a few phone meetings. That's a good point, Judge Buckley. And then,
I think it was Judge Cope.
No, Judge Cope?
Putting my hand in.
Well, I'm not sure that anymore, so never mind. Oh, it's Riley. Take my hand back down.
For now, okay.
I just wanted to indicate that I have serious concerns about, I guess what I would call kicking the can down the road even by a month or so. We're currently building our budgets for this year. We're looking at what our expenditures are going to be. And although we are, you know, receiving new monies, we still have a lot of things that we need to make up for from the last years of the Great Recession. A 3.4 this year, a 9 next year, 11.4, that's serious money. And to say that there might be a hope on the horizon, that's not something I can take back to my court. You know, we can't say in the middle of the year that we need to make adjustments somewhere else because of this, especially when we have been very prudent in the way that we're expanding our services. I would say that we need to make some decisions now. Maybe a pause would be okay, but I can't see it going past September. I have serious concerns about kicking this down, waiting for a BCP to come through.
So what if, pairing off of Judge Cope's suggestion, again, just to sort of frame some action we could take, would be essentially we notify the trial courts of the pending deficits exactly as you just set forth for the years in question. So the trial courts are on notice. Here is, if there is no change in the structural shortfall of the fund, here is what the cuts to the fund will be. However, we then refer back to staff to put a report together with the options we've discussed today, to refer to R&E and then write to tick back to tick back. It'd be to tick back for a telephonic meeting to then make that decision so we can get to the September meeting. Judge Cope? Judge Cope next, and then Mike Roddy. Mike Roddy, then Judge Cope.
I can support that recommendation. I think that's, you know, it's a middle ground. I might say, with respect to the larger deficits that are out there in the future, I view this as a one-year problem, because let's be honest, if we can't solve those bigger structural deficits, it will strike at the very heart of our mandated service delivery. There won't be enough money there for criminal. And that's going to be a much, much bigger impact. And so I'm going to deal with it this year, because by next year, if we get to a $10 million deficit, all bets are off. I mean, I don't know what we do at that point. And so I'll deal with next year. But I am concerned about the starting and stopping aspects of this, and that's very difficult to control in the trial court, especially when we've now got our folks accustomed to the availability of these services. And if there's any conceivable, reasonable way that we can agree to that keeps the service intact this year, I'll fight the future battles down the road.
Yeah, I think it is what it is. I mean, if nothing happens, then the money's not going to be there. So this is not a situation where we said we're going to take money back. If nothing changes, we have to tell the trial courts, this is what's going to happen as soon as October 1st. But here are the options being considered. We'll get back to you, hopefully. Chad Finke.
I think Judge Cope.
Judge Cope?
Well, I'm going to make that motion. And I agree. We shouldn't kick things down the road when they have to be decided just for the purpose of kicking them down the road. But there are options that I don't think I voted to recommend this to this committee, there are options, and I think Sherry's right. We need to see some of the numbers behind those options and see what they are. I hate to hear that even a very short delay may mean that some of those options go away, and that's what you're saying.
The $4 million that right. was dedicated for, I don't know, signage and equipment.
Right. And I hate to hear that that may be going away, but I do think we need to better look at the options. So I'm going to make the motion to adopt Judge Conklin's suggestion.
Okay.
And I cannot word.
Put some formality to it. I just talked to Lucy, and she understands the options that have been discussed for the purpose of preparing a report. So we would be, and Judge Cope, correct me then if I'm wrong, as to your motion, that this matter be referred to staff to prepare a report setting forth the recommendations discussed today, that report then to be submitted to TCBAC in a time that would allow it to have a telephonic meeting that would allow the council to consider the recommendation in October.
September.
In the meantime, trial courts will be advised that absent any supplement to the fund, that as of October 1st, that those interpreter services may not be reimbursed.
Can we be that specific, given that it's a council action as far as what will be the specific, just that there may not be sufficient funds to reimburse?
Sure, there may not be sufficient funds to reimburse for interpreter services.
Assuming that you're
because it's the lowest priority, the branch should serve together.
Yeah.
Which priorities? That's why we made the priorities in the first
place. But it's a broader statement as
right.
far as just in potentially insufficient. But yes,
Lucy.
Do you want us to bring also a recommendation for a ongoing policy?
No.
I think that needs to be discussed either by FMS or R&D as far as a policy discussion. This is just we're getting this small thing taken care of right now.
If I could just add, Zoe, I'm a little out of them. I'm not one of you, but I think by highlighting civil, it's just it will cause potential problems. People are skitterish already at the CEO level, which I know, and I would be too. And we've worked very hard to shape this to allow people that we're getting more money for civil. And by saying if you do civil, you're going to be you may not be compensated for it. It could cause problems, I think, in the long, long range. If we could just have it that, the notice that's saying that there may be, if none of this comes to pass, there may be a reduction in your reimbursement at the end of the year, and then just cut it off there, it would be so much better for all concerned, I think.
Sherry, you hear me?
Yeah, I'll tell you the reason that I don't agree is because we established a priority recognizing is almost critical, and I can see scenarios where if it's that broad, CEOs will then worry that they won't get reimbursement in family law or some of the other case cuts that are a higher priority. We can word it so that it doesn't – I understand what your concern is, but I also know how people that balance budgets think, and if it's not clear that we're looking at the lowest priority – I do think that there will be courts that are not providing 100% now in family law or perhaps in some of the higher priorities where they will stop doing that because they will be worried they won't balance their budget. And I also think that for the branch to recognize there are priorities, regardless of whatever, you always need to do juvenile, you always need to do family law. We're really talking now about what we identified as the lowest priority. I understand what you're saying because we want to encourage courts to expand, but the flip side of that coin is if they haven't expanded already and we don't get money, aren't they better off not expanding than they would be expanding and not getting reimbursement?
If I could just have one more point. The way you said that, if you're saying that you're talking about level 8 with
yes,
the,
right.
as opposed to the entire all
yes.
8 levels, and there's been some over the last couple of week and a half or so, and even in the materials, where there's been some difficulty on understanding exactly what the recommendation is, if it's
yeah.
just level 8 or if it's all of the levels. Perhaps it's just clear that it's just level 8 that you might have some problems with.
Yeah, so we're talking about the lowest level of civil.
No.
Right.
And then I'm going to ask for clarification.
My question relates to
you. Judge Conklin, is Mike Planet? I have my hand up.
Okay, good. Mike, we'll go to you right after David.
So,
okay.
So I think this is
sensitivity of calling out civil, because there's a long list of cases. We may be able to accomplish the same objective if we were to say in accordance with the priorities set forth by the Judicial Council in providing interpreter services to non-mandated areas. Again, it doesn't call it out.
No, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
I would hope so. I'm good with that, but again, the vagueness for people that are not in the room or understand the priorities or haven't kind of
They may not
even get into the priorities that are higher than civil. But I'm okay with that.
Well, we'll just have the report included. We'll just refer it as an addendum to the report and say, we remind you, here are the priorities.
And this may be another item that gets discussed, you know, closed session at the joint meeting.
Mike Planet, and then I've got the priorities right here. So, Mike Planet.
So, yeah, I just want to make the point that we're all at the point of trying to build our budget for the current fiscal year. We won't know until middle of August, hopefully, the final council approval on the $75 million. And now we've got this issue. So from a practical standpoint, I need to know now or soon either how much I'm not going to – the total amount I'm not going to get reimbursed for or what the case type is. So if I have the answer to one of those two questions, then I can kind of begin planning. So I just want to point out those are two critical pieces of information that we need to know sooner rather than later.
So I think just to put some clarity on this, and I have the priorities here. So priority one obviously is mandated. Priority two is unlawful detainer. Priority three is action to terminate parental rights. Priority four is conservatorship or guardianship. Priority five is actions by a parent to obtain sole legal or physical custody guardianship. Priority six is elder and dependent adult abuse not involving physical abuse or neglect other than civil harassment. Priority seven is all other family law not involving domestic violence. And priority eight is all other civil cases.
No, two through eight.
Right, it's two through eight. One is the mandated. But,
yeah.
So.
So the $3.8 million is for two through eight.
Right, two through eight. So a court can pay for whatever interpreter services it wants to pay for. But when it goes to the fund and says, reimburse me for what I paid for, you're reimbursed according to the priorities.
Right.
So if you decide, I'm just making this up, so please don't anybody say, I think this is what you should do. I'm just making that. If you decide you're going to pour all your money into all other family law, not involving domestic, by priority seven, but you haven't spent money in two through six, when you go to the fund, you're not going to get reimbursed for that. So the fund just reimburses you according to the priority, and that's all we're going to tell courts. Here's the priority. The fund reimburses you pursuant to the priority. If there are insufficient funds, then pursuant to the priority, the funds will not be reimbursed from eight moving up. In the meantime, staff will provide recommendations back to TICBAC for alternatives that may resolve this problem, asterisk, if there's no BCP, to be submitted to the council for a September meeting. Judge Cope, does that?
Yes, that'll be fine. But nobody seconded it. So
I know. I'm just trying to give it for staff so staff understands.
So I think to clarify, to go to Mike's point, because it is a little bit mushier than what I had hoped. And that is exactly what my worry is, that people are not going to go into the really important areas because of the vagueness. I do think we need to anticipate the whole to be so that someone like Mike could look at his historical percentage and apply it and say, okay, it looks like I might be short, you know, $150,000. At least it gives them an idea so that they can do their own math because it's a little mushier.
And so let's put that out to echo Mike Roddy for just the next year, for that 1 year of 3.8. For 2018-2019, the anticipated deficit. $3.4 million. Absent any additional changes to the fund, the projected fund balance is negative $3.443 million for 18-19. So everybody knows what it is.
And just from the mechanical standpoint, each court actually gets a certain dollar amount, right? So if you were to divvy up 3.4 million, that's that target that Mike can budget for, I can can realize what is it, where do we have to scale back, presumably in those areas that are a lesser priority.
If nothing improves.
Nothing improves.
But the reason I don't like that, David, is because some courts have expanded to every courtroom in every litigation area, like L.A., and some courts have not expanded anywhere. And so that means my cut will be significantly bigger because I am currently providing it. So I don't agree with the proportionate cut. I think it has to be a reimbursement thing. You can certainly try to apply it to the whole, but some courts are not going to be supplying any reimbursement requests because they're only doing mandated.
There aren't any courts doing that anymore.
Well, but there's some that haven't expanded as deeply as...
Just a couple, really. It's pretty much everywhere is expanded now.
Chad? So I guess it's a sort of another mechanical question for Zlatko or maybe Lucy, which is... I'm trying to think of how to formulate this, but so back when I was involved with the court interpreter program, judicial counsel finance, the staff who were processing the reimbursements were not getting deep into the weeds. So I guess the question is JCC set up so that if they needed to, by the end of this year, you know, are you guys able to go through the submissions from each of the court and say, okay, this is an 8, that's a 7, that's a 6, and how is the timing going to work, right? So if I put in a reimbursement for a 4, and then you're thinking, okay, we can get through the 4s, and then in the 11th hour, Mike puts in a big old reimbursement for a 2, is my 4 suddenly, I mean, I'm trying to get my head around the mechanics of how this is going to work, or is it even going to work?
Yeah,
since
we have mechanic issues.
I think that's the policy problem we need to send back to probably FMS to put on their work plan to solve that. Because as I understand it now, and maybe my understanding is not 100% correct, but it's people go to the fund and say, I spent this, I want to get repaid for it.
You put case numbers down on the sheet.
Right,
so
you have to specify.
So, I mean, that's why probably we would appreciate some time to come up with a recommendation we actually could support administratively.
Right.
I think that's a definite issue. I'm only looking at this now because I'm trying to break this down
right
as a problem between now and our telephonic meeting, which we either have the answers to this question, or at that point I'm going to hope we have answers to the how do we actually implement the cut issue. So I think we need to get there first, because if we can solve this year's problem, the rest of the conversation becomes moot. And I'm still at that point of being hopeful that Zlatko and his team can put their best efforts at this thing and figure out a workable solutions.
Okay.
This year.
So Judge Cope has made the motion. I thought I heard it seconded. It has been seconded. So does everybody have an understanding now of the motion that's been seconded? Any questions about that? I want to make sure it's a good solution, and it's going to help us to pause a little bit, but not pause so much. And it's going to, remember, it's going to include the notification to the trial courts that we're going to reattach these priorities and say, if nothing changes, you've got that deficit and you're aware of it. Anybody want any further discussion on this item? Mike Planet on the phone. Anybody else on the phone?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay. Pausing, hearing no request for further discussion. Is there any opposition to the motion that's been made and seconded? So Judge Herman opposed. Any other opposition? All right, so the motion passes with one nay. Okay, all right. And thank you very much, staff, for you taking on even more work. I'll be in touch with you and let you know when we're going to schedule that telephonic meeting to be in line with getting it through R&E and to the council for the September meeting.
Would you mind if I spoke again or just... Justice Cuellar would be part of that discussion as well.
Well, you can always, so, not to be direct, I'm not sure.
Okay,
you can always
think develop, let's see.
Yep. We'll see how it develops. We'll keep you apprised. I'm sure Justice Cuellar is going to stay on top of this. I mean, it might be, but given the timing, it may be just one of those ones where the best bang for his buck or your buck is public comment at the council.
And that's what I'm somewhat concerned with. There will be a lot of public who's going to want to comment, and so there should be some time frame. in place and everyone realizes it may be a busy session.
Something tells me Justice Miller is going to be made aware of that.
So I just want to make sure everybody understands the number of people that come to our community forums. They're quite a few.
Okay. And there's also, by the way, there's always the opportunity for a written comment. And if there really is. If
I have a feeling there'll be many people who want to come in person. So I just to make sure that there's plenty of time, whatever decision you end up making, I'm sure it's going to work out, and I really do appreciate you all for being here with me.
And thank you, Justin.
Let me speak to this and addressing our concerns.
And thank Justice Cuellar for his comments as well.
Yeah.
Okay,
thanks a lot.
Thank you. So we're now going to move straight through. Next is item 5, which is the preliminary one-time reduction for fund balances above the 1% cap. Is Melissa here?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Melissa Ng, Budget Services. I'm spending on item 5. It's the 2017-18 preliminary one-time reduction for fund balances above the 1% cap. Just give a little background.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Melissa. It's on page 32 of your materials. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. So to give a little background, each year courts are required to submit a preliminary computation of their ending fund balance that is subject to the 1% cap. A reflects this preliminary computation reported by the court, and 5B reflects the summary of all courts. Courts may only carry over unexpended funds not to exceed 1% of the court's operating budget from the prior year. This is pursuant to government code. Typically, the July preliminary information is presented to the Judicial Council at the July meeting. However, due to some timing issues meeting and the closing of the prior year, this was not possible, and so is being presented here today for consideration at the next Judicial Council meeting. Based on the preliminary year-end information received from the court, staff recommends approving the 2017-18 preliminary one-time allocation reduction of $658,398 to 8 courts that are projecting their ending fund balance to exceed the cap. Just to note, this is a preliminary reduction, and courts are required to submit their final 1% computation with final year-end information by October 15th. And the final 1% reduction will be presented before the Judicial Council at a meeting sometime before February.
All right, so the recommendation set forth, Mike Roddy?
The staff recommendation on this item.
So Mike Roddy moves to approve. The staff recommendation is set forth word for word on page 33. David Yamasaki seconds. Any further discussion on this item? Seems pretty straightforward, but I don't want to stifle any open discussion. Seeing no hands, hearing no comment on the phone from committee members, is there any opposition to the motions made and seconded that the recommendation set forth on page 33 be adopted? Hearing none, it's unanimously approved. Melissa, thank you so much. And that takes care of all our action items on the agenda. The next is an informational item. And we have Donna with us to discuss the TCTF revenue backfill shortfall updates.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Judge. Well, Rocco was right. He stole some of my thunder, so I'm going to go through my little spiel anyway. And good news. So exciting, right? So I would like to provide an update on the item that was presented to TCTF in April and to the Judicial Council in May regarding the Trial Court Trust Fund revenue shortfall. In April, based on the current revenue projections at the time, the Judicial Council's Budget Services Office was projecting a revenue shortfall of approximately $7 million in the revenues that support the trial court-based operations in 2017-18. Since the Budget Act of 2014, the Judicial Council has received a general fund appropriation to backfill these revenue shortfalls. However, in that April-May timeframe, the backfill was projected to be insufficient. So, Budget Services presented 3 options to address the shortfall, and the TCTF recommended to the Judicial Council to use the Trial Court Trust Fund balance to cover the potential shortfall in 2017-18. That recommendation was subsequently approved by the Judicial Council, and it was anticipated to be up to $7 million that may be needed from the trial court trust fund to backfill the estimated revenue shortfall to fully fund and support the trial court operations. Each month, as actual revenue data is collected, the projections are updated. Revenues are typically at least 2 months in arrears, sometimes up to three. The exception to the rule is civil, which is approximately one month in arrears. So, as of today, actual revenues have been reported through April 2018, and I'm happy to report that based on our current revenue projections, it is estimated that the $55 million from the general fund revenue backfill that was provided in the 2017-18 Budget Act is sufficient to cover the trial court trust fund revenue shortfall needs. Increases to revenue collections on the civil side are partially offsetting the continued decline in the criminal revenue collections. The final backfill amount will not be determined until September when all revenue data is collected for 2017. That's it?
Sure. So I think I understood. So the amount of money that we were given as a shortfall, we're not using all of it.
We were appropriated $55 million,
right?
And at the time when this item was put before TIC back in the Judicial Council, we were estimating that number was going to be closer to $63 million.
And it's now what? Our projection.
Our projection currently is around $47 million.
So we're still short.
Yes.
But we're just not $55 million short.
But we have been backfilled to $55 million.
Yes.
So we're not
for revenue shortfall.
Yes. Correct.
So even if we did want to use that money to help with this and not the trial court trust fund balance, we would still probably need to get authority to use it because that was revenue shortfall money that was provided. I'm sure we would. So I just want to point out that the revenue is still short. It's just not as we thought. Okay. I mean, I'm painting a picture because people, we need to know that we're still short.
But I guess that goes to the heart of whether it simply is an augmentation to the general fund, to the
right.
trust fund,
right.
and is therefore, or is restricted in some purpose.
Exactly.
And I don't know.
We have a fund balance in the trust fund. You're just talking about the one sliver of all the revenues that what we thought
we're talking about the backfill money,
yeah, the $55 million.
Do you have to give permission? If our projection of revenue shortfall, which is backfilled by the legislature and approved by the governor, is now 47 and not 55, do we have to have permission to use it on something else since our projection wasn't as good?
Out of full transparency, we'd be letting you know all of the parts.
Yeah.
But there are fund balances, a fund balance in the TCPF beyond that. And if we were to reserve it and say, you know, that it would offset next year's request, That'd be a different question.
So I think we need those details, which is why it's going to be harder to bring it here than to the revenue expenditure who's been looking at this forever, but I know we don't have time. But there's a lot of nuances between the backfill that was provided versus...
But that's not again, full transparency, we'd be letting DOF know, hey,
yeah.
that would be a final actual accruals came in and we did much better. Thank you, and we will account for that. But separate and apart from that difference, unless something has changed dramatically, there's still fund balance in the TCPF setting aside.
And
that
would be for the voices at the committee to decide if they need to use that for an unfunded mandate versus holding it for something else that deals directly with operations.
Fair enough, just saying mathematically
okay.
we have money.
So we said it was going to be 55, it's 47, that's 8, and we're going to tell what happens to that 8, it's
yeah.
going to go somewhere else.
I think, you know what, the shortfall... Our updated forecast when we build the governor's budget would include that.
Well, like I said, the final numbers won't be in until September. And given that revenues fluctuate, I don't want everyone to fixate on the $8 million.
Yeah, because there's other monies in it.
There's fires.
That have been the last couple of years of fund balance. So, and we, before we even knew the shortfall, we thought we were going to commit $7 million, upwards of $7 million, to backfill what was at that time.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. And finally, last information item before adjournment is the court reporter budget BCP proposal from Lucy.
And this is literally informational, so you all know now we go through this process throughout the spring about bringing you
BCP concept where you prioritize and have your opportunity to provide input for the digital branch budget committee to consider when they're setting prices for the entire branch. Well, as you're all aware, we had the Jameson Supreme Court opinion that has impacted what you have to do in supporting reporters in civil. So the JBBC decided at their last meeting and presented to the council in July to add a BCP for court reporters in light of that opinion. And they listed that as priority five on their BCP branch-wide. This is just a placeholder for now. Leah actually is working on developing that BCP through data gathering, and that will be finalized with submission to the Department of Finance in September. So again, we'll report back to you once we know the final number, but just an FYI that that's been added and does impact the travel.
Okay, so true to form, it's 1:25 instead of 2 o'clock. First off, any else? I think we've taken care of the agenda. I don't see any other agenda items. I'm going to finish the meeting and similar start to say thank you all very much. I as far as the next chair, who knows? I did fail in numerous aspects, and one of my greatest failures, I think, was not getting In-N-Out Burger for. By the way, I know I was going to try. And if people are listening and thinking they get lunch, I challenge you to come to these meetings and look at the lunch and not say they spent their money in a very economic manner. It's a good lunch. But I don't think anybody would look at it and say, that's, and by the way, the cookies have been cut too. So, thank you all very much. We stand adjourned. Have safe travels.
The host has left the meeting. So at this time, the meeting will come to an end. Thank you, and goodbye.